Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rhyme to our quite unsingable. We're off the mad in Camelot. We sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how do you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I am Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Do you hear that? Do you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Hear ye, hear ye. King Shaziz the Terrible. All rise for King Shaziz the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
Was that ant that stood up to me?
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Hmm, puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have 1/3 of its real estate and 4/5 of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree. Thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old, I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
Ladies and gentlemen, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no secret is revealed. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, watch that sound. Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Into your life it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop.
Yeah, all rise for King Shaziz the Terrible. I might have to change my name to Rotten or Ruthless or something like that. Something cool. Get a tattoo and everything. You know what I'm saying? Maybe one of those spiked helmets or something like that. Never-ending wars and crime. So, you know, I was sitting here this morning, actually kind of through the night, and I'm thinking about all kinds of things going on out there in the world, and I'm thinking, man, who's behind all this kind of stuff? And it's like, you know, I know that every single nation has their flaws. I posted some videos about how many wars the U.S. has been in and still in to this very day. The Afghan war has been going on for 18 years. All right, now I'm not anti-American, so don't get me wrong by what I'm saying today, because I'm not trying to, you know, talk down my country. I love my country. I love the people in my country. I just don't love the things that the people are doing to each other and doing to the world. But if you want to be truthful with yourself and intellectually honest, that you know, it's not just America that's got these flaws. It's there's many nations around the world that got their own flaws, that treat their people poorly and so on down the line. But if you step back, you look at the big picture, you can see for your own eyes that it's not the majority, it's not the people. There are crime families all over this world. Crime families that are basically into politics, the military-industrial complex, the people behind the scenes pushing buttons, because war is profitable. Everybody makes money during war, except the people, especially the people that are out there on the battlefield. I mean, they get a paycheck, sure, you know, make them feel good. Hey, I got a paycheck, I could support my family. There's a lot of people that, young men to go, and women to go into the military just so that they can, you know, get some money for education and all that kind of stuff. But in the background, they know that there's a potential they could lose their life for that job, you know. And it's all under the guise of patriotism. Excuse me, I had to take a drink of my coffee. I had some coffee this morning because this has been one rowdy night in my mind. I've been thinking about this stuff so much, it just drives me bonkers. But this whole entire thing, everything that we talk about here on the Knights of the Round Table, trying to find solutions to all the problems of the world, we got our work cut out for us. You know, there's a lot of problems out there. Now, one person by themselves obviously can't do it. You know, maybe a lot of people can get a lot of stuff done, but it's going to take something really profound in order to get past the mess that humanity has created throughout these generations. It's mind-blowing. There were people in positions of power that came out and tried to warn us, like Kennedy and another guy, I can't remember what his name was, talking about the military-industrial complex. But anyway, you know, there were people that tried to warn the American people about what was going on. And of course, they didn't fare so well. And of course, you know about Martin Luther King. He come out there and tried to bring everybody together and stuff like that, and he didn't fare so well. It seems like all the folks that want to try to bring everyone together, they don't fare so well. You know, here in the last day or so, I've started having trouble with my server that I run my radio show off of. And, you know, one thing's a coincidence, two things it's a little curious, and then three things that's a little bit more. And then eventually you get to the point where you start to think that maybe somebody don't like what I'm trying to talk about, so I get a few issues here and there. And so, you know, I'm adding all this in. I'm factoring every little bit of details of what's going on. You know, and I keep coming back to the same thing. Who and why and what, you know? I've watched so many doggone videos. My mind's about melted. It's about mush. It's just so much information to try to take in. But what I've gathered through the whole deal is I think the devil loves you. You know, the dark side loves you. Whoever the devil is or whatever the devil is, I think the devil loves you because you're kind of gullible. You know, you go out there and you jump on the battlefield and you wave your banner and you do your thing. And, you know, you might lose a leg or an arm or whatever. But these folks out there that are up in high positions of power, They don't just battle with other nations. They battle with each other for power. You know, the military-industrial complex has this spy versus spy thing going on. The CIA, the FBI, the war on drugs, the war on everything. And as all these wars are going on around the world, as America is kind of embedded all around the world, you know, we're basically, as Americans, being used as the world's police, so to speak. Now, we're not the only ones. It's like this. He who lives in glass house should not throw stones. So I'm not trying to throw stones. I'm talking bad about my place that I live in. I'm talking bad about my house because I don't understand why that we, the people, don't rise up and raise our voice and say, look, we're about tired of this. We've been in Afghanistan for 18 years, for Pete's sake. When are we going to get out of there? Well, the whole concept is, well, they want to come here. They want to get us. Well, how are they going to get here first? Well, they could probably get across any of the borders. That's usually the way people do come across. But it's all right. You know, that's how it works. But they want a clash of cultures. They want to shove this culture with that culture because they know that it's going to create a fight, you know, it's going to create a ruckus, so to speak. So, you know, you're never going to get these two different ideologies to meet together in the middle and say, hey, you know, you're a Muslim, I'm a Christian, everything's cool, you know, we just hang out together. No, because one ideology hates the other ideology, one wants to chop the other one's head off and all this kind of jazz. And it don't stop there. They got you in the streets arguing amongst each other. They got you fighting and along political, religious ideologies. And the youth of today, man, I feel so bad for the youth of today because some of them are so deceived into believing some crazy stuff. If you ever want, as a you know, older person, if you ever want to really get in depth and see how the youth of today think, sit down and don't talk, just listen. Maybe spark up a conversation. What do you think about the world? What do you think about God? What do you think about politics? And just listen to them. From that point on, don't say a word. Just listen to them. It'll blow your doors off. I'm telling you, it will blow your doors. It's a mind-blowing experience to sit around with a bunch of people of multiple different ages, you know, 15 all the way up to 18, maybe even 20 or more, and you listen to what they say. You listen to their views on God. You listen to their views on the devil. You know, I've sat around with kids that claim that they're straight-up Satanists, but they say that they don't believe in Satan. Well, why would you call yourself a Satanist if you didn't believe in Satan? And it's a whole different deal. But it's like, if you want to go down a rabbit hole, that's the one to go down to find out what the heck is the future of our countries, all of our nations. What's the future of our nation? That's our children. All of our children, all of our youth, they are the future. You know, there's a lot of songs out there. Shout at the Devil. That's one. You know, I played it on the radio last night since the auto DJ's been jacked with. You know, I couldn't just let the other thing, that's what was playing. So I just got on there for about 3 hours and played a whole bunch of music. But in there it's talking about that the youth are the future and talking about come now and shout at the devil, you know. Is it shouting, you know, bad things at the devil or saying, you know, like I like you or whatever? It's really, it's a mind bender. But it doesn't stop there. It gets so more in depth when you start looking down the rabbit hole of secret societies that they say exist in this world, deep state governments, and actually how the government works, and how the military-industrial complex and all the lobbyists lobby because they want to keep these perpetual wars going. I mean, it's profitable. And even when it comes down to who the actual drug lords are, we probably got senators and congressmen and women who behind the scenes are connected through all this drug, you know, on one hand shouting out in your face on TV, we got to end the war on drugs, we got to fix this, you know, and then behind the scenes, they're actually looting and pillaging the nation and drugging everybody and making money hand over fist. If you go back and look at all the different crime families of the world and all the history of that, and even to the extent of going as farther back into the prohibition of alcohol and all that kind of stuff, every time you tried to tell the people that they couldn't have something, you opened up another crime market. So that means somebody in that crime family is going to make money. So when you ban marijuana, well, they ain't going to stop buying marijuana just because it's illegal. If you think I'm not telling the truth, go to any rock concert here in the United States. And far as that goes, you could go to a country concert and you'll smell it as well. The whole cloud floating above the stadium wherever the concert's at. It's everybody's stoned out their gourd. They're drinking Budweiser and Bush and all these different alcoholic drinks. And some of them's probably popping pills and doing all kinds of stuff, you know. So the self-medication of the population, plus the forced medication of our children, anywhere from Ritalin, Prozac, Luvox, and all this kind of jazz. Well, you know, and it don't stop there. Adults on some sort of calming pill. The medical industry's making money hand over fist. So I think to myself sometimes, I say, well, you know, they say they want to try to kill us, but then again, why would you want to kill your cattle, your cash cow? Because we're making them money. You know, they can keep us sick, but if they killed us all off, who's going to fight their wars? You know, they're going to move in somebody like, you know, let's say Russia's behind it. They're going to soft kill us all, you know, so we don't even know we're being murdered or whatever. And so as soon as we all die, you know, they just kind of walk on in and they take over or something like that. Or maybe it was Britain, you know. Maybe it's China. Maybe China's trying to kill us all off and take our land. You know, so you got all these possibilities of the evil ones behind the scenes that are trying to kill us. Well, I'd like to submit it ain't some sort of secret society that's trying to kill us. I'm saying we're trying to kill ourselves. I mean, come on. I don't know what it will take in order to get the people of this world to realize that they are being used for what that one guy called it, cannon fodder, used for everything under the sun, experiments and all this kind of stuff, you know. Heck, the CIA and the different government agencies out there released, things like flu and colds in subways to see how fast it would spread and all that kind of jazz. Spraying crud in the air. That was a big conspiracy theory. Why in the heck would they be spraying crud in the air? Well, maybe it has something to do with all these biological weapons that they got. Are they either trying to kill us, or are they trying to force inoculate us so that America can keep its army together, you know? Because you are the army, whether you're in the military or not. You don't have to ever serve in the U.S. military. You're still part of the army. You're making them money. You're making them money when you go to jail. For-profit prisons, courthouses, every time you get fined with something, and if you don't pay, it don't matter. They don't care whether you pay or not, they just put you in jail. Somebody's getting paid as long as they're in jail. Why do you think these companies will go out there and say, hey, yeah, I'll build a prison, and I'll house all your criminals for you so you don't have to, and you just pay me, you know, and so that they have a reason to want to keep all the beds full. You know, they want to keep them all full. They want to keep people in jail. So you might have a judge that might have stock in that company and say, well, you know, I'm probably one person short of filling up my prison. I don't like the way this guy looks, so I'm gonna throw him in jail. So you're off to jail. That you think you didn't get a fair trial. Well, maybe you didn't get a fair trial. You know? Maybe we ain't none of us getting a fair trial. Maybe the cards are stacked against us from start to finish. Maybe the system was stacked against us from start to finish. But once again, they don't want to kill you off because you're going to make them money. If you kill your cash cow, you ain't going to make no money. Imagine there's supposedly 320 million people in the United States. They're all dead. Nobody's working anymore. Well, there's nobody to fight the military. There's nobody for the police to run around the armed revenue generators for the state. They ain't going to be able to do nothing. And the government indoctrination centers, a.k.a. public schools, there ain't going to be no teachers to teach your kids a bunch of lies and half-truths and mishistories and stuff like that. As I started looking even deeper into this rabbit hole, my mind was blown even farther when I realized that there were wars that the United States was involved in. I had no idea. Nobody taught that in history class, but how somebody was able to find out. There's a video link that I posted in the chat room that'll show a listing of wars starting all the way from the Revolution all the way up to the Civil War and on into the modern day deal and, you know, finally into Afghanistan, where we've been there for 18 years. We not only been fighting overseas everywhere under the sun, but we've also been fighting one another here on our shore. We've got the police against the dope freaks. We got the governments against the people. We got the crime families against each other. We got people out there, gangs, the Crips versus the Bloods versus the doggone anti-fascist, the versus the red hat wearing Trump supporter, or the liberal side of the whatever. And you got the media out there stoking the fire. They're constantly running there. If it's just a little flame, they'll run in there, throw a 15-gallon tank of gas on that thing and get it going good. We got some stories now, folks. Because for some reason, not just in the movies where where they glamorize war, they glamorize violence, they glamorize sex, they glamorize drugs, they glamorize money, gold, and all this kind of stuff. You got to have the bling around your neck. You got to have your pants half hanging down over your buttocks. And you got to have your boxers hanging out so that you look cool. You got to talk funny. You can't speak regular language anymore. You got to have some sort of your own language. Got to make up these nifty little signs where you can tell each other, I'm from this club and you're from that club and I hate your guts and all that kind of stuff. They don't want the white man liking the yellow man. They don't want the white man liking the red man. They don't want the red or yellow or black man to like the white man. They don't want any of you to like each other at all. Because as long as they don't like you, as long as you don't like each other, you're going to get mad. And you're going to start doing things. But the most thing is you're going to make a lot of purchases. You're going to make purchases you may not have otherwise made in a peaceful world, such as you're going to go out and buy guns. You think they want to take your guns away from you, but in reality, there's a good potential possibility that they don't want to take your guns. They want you to buy more guns. They only tell you that they want to take your guns so that you will go out and buy more guns, and so that you will be out in the streets shooting one another. So, this debate between the left wing and the right wing connected to the same bird is just, watch this hand while I sock you in the eye with the other one kind of thing. You know, the Jerry Springer effect. Whisper in this person's ear what you done and you're hateful and you're a racist, and whisper in that other ear and tell them the same doggone thing. And so the next thing you know, you're at each other's throat. Folks, I wish that there was a way that I could wave a magic wand around the entire world, just kind of put a big old circle around there so that everyone and his brother, every time they did anything, would see the consequences of their action. When they're sitting there snorting that line of coke, and they see back where that line of coke came from and how much blood was involved in it, not just innocent people, but there were probably government agents involved in the thing. There were probably law enforcement involved in the thing. More than likely so. The top leaders of the world, you think that they got as rich as they got by not stepping on the backs of the average Joe? You got to be pretty ruthless to become a millionaire in this world. You got to be pretty ruthless, even more ruthless, to become a billionaire. What's it take to become a trillionaire? Look at all this stuff. You know, sometimes I have to ask myself, is it too late? Is this going to literally require divine intervention from some sort of alien race that has their act together, or some sort of god or whatever? Or is it possible that somehow or another throughout all this madness we can wise up? But if I could wave my hand out there and I could make the whole world see every time they do anything, who's getting paid? That might change a lot. Who had to die for that? Man, you go to Walmart, you go to any of the big name stores and you buy these nifty products, you get a really good price, you know, it's pretty cool. You know, you can afford it with that measly wage that you get. But then, did you know that some of those clothes and some of those products that were made by children in some other nation that didn't have a good working environment, probably should have been in school instead of in the factory? But these folks up there in charge, the ones that want to make the money, the corporate people up there, that they don't look into all that. And maybe even if they do look into it, they turn a blind eye to it because they're making money hand over fist. You know, we got people in the government who are committing open crimes. Nancy Pelosi just at the presidential speech, I don't care whether you like her or dislike her, whether you like the president or you don't like the president, that's neither here nor there. But the fact is, she tore up government documents right there. This is supposed to be a matter of public record. Those are government documents. It's a felony. It is a felony to do that. And she didn't get arrested. And will she get arrested? I don't know. I highly doubt it. And the thing about it is, they are going to try to, charge her with some sort of, violation. But will that mean she gets fined? Will that mean she gets jailed? I highly doubt it. Because all the crimes that you see from all these different politicians, their connections to crime families and all that kind of stuff seems to be like, it's the double standard thing. The law works for you. You do what you're supposed to under the law, but they get they got a different set of laws. They don't have to go to jail for things, And it's kind of really, really telling whenever you see that it, you could actually, if you got enough money and you do have to go to jail, you know, well, you can pay that jail some extra money. They'll give you some extra benefits. You'll have color TV, probably internet service and catered food and all that kind of stuff. While the average Joe is down there eating the hog slop that they put on his plate, telling them you eat it or die. It's doggone insane. So I think this world, the never-ending crime, the never-ending wars, you know, it's got people so, you know, turned inside out, stressed to the point where they don't really care anymore. They don't really care to hear, you know, that there's somebody in the world that's worse off than them. You know, some of us who, you know, were raised differently, you know, I'm really seriously thankful for everything that I got, because I know that there's people out in the world that aren't nearly as fortunate. Some of them ain't fortunate at all. You know, I know when I'm sleeping in my warm bed, there's somebody sleeping on the streets. I wished I could help them. I wished I could. I wished I had the money. If I was a trillionaire, I'd probably be broke within the next couple days, because I'd be out there trying to find those in need and try to, you know, help them out any way possible. But that's not realistic. I'm never going to be rich like that. Heck, you know, especially doing what it is that I do. There's folks out there that just despise you when you talk like we're talking. We're talking about bringing peace and love and unity together, and in the meantime, you got somebody out there planning the next conflict, or planning the next war, or planning how they're going to screw the people over again. You know, there is a darkness in this world, and we have to find a way to overcome it. And the only way that I know how to overcome it is to reach down inside yourself and try to make yourself as strong as you possibly can, so that you can survive this mess. You know, it's pretty bad when you're born. You're on your way to death. You're going to die one day, and you're killing yourself just to live. You're killing yourself just to try to keep happy. You're shooting drugs into your veins, you're snorting cocaine or crack or meth up your nose or whatever, smoking everything under the doggone sun, drinking, popping pills, doing all kinds of stuff. And even those who go to church, the nice beautiful ladies who they live in the fancy houses, they're on some sort of mood drug, because they got these different illnesses now that they you probably didn't hear about. You know, back in the older days, they were on I can't remember what the heck that drug was, but it was pretty popular amongst the rich people. But everybody's being medicated. Everybody's been indoctrinated, being brainwashed. How do you get past all that? How do you fix all that? It's made to seem like you're hopeless. But in reality, you're not. And slowly we're having an awakening where more people are coming to the realization that things aren't exactly the way they've been told. That in some incidents, they're nowhere near what they've been told. These folks out there that are taking you to the cleaners, putting you up in the jailhouse, abusing you, taking your money out of your pocket for supposed crimes. Heck, you go look into how many crimes the average person commits in one day without even knowing it, because there's so many laws on the books. It's mind-blowing. So you're... Man, you think slavery was ended? No, I think slavery just started. I mean, it ain't just started, but it ain't never stopped. So these folks that want to stay rich, they're going to do whatever nasty, dirty deed that they can to do it. If it requires taking out a few people, well, you know, think about it. Think about that John F. Kennedy speech. What happened to him? What happened to Martin Luther King? What happened to all the other folks out there that stepped up and said something? What happened to all the alternative free energy researchers out there that actually got some working devices ready? We're fighting a beast. We're fighting a demon of biblical proportions, epic proportions. It's worse than Goliath. But I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to lay down to the dark side. I'm going to find a way to keep my energy high as all I possibly can so that I can be strong and so I can still have the guts to stand up here and say all these words, knowing for a fact that I'm going to be mocked and ridiculed and potentially hassled or worse. So anyway, I'm not here by myself. Hi, Barbara Starr. Sorry about the long rant, but, you know, I'm trying to put it all into perspective, and it's hard because it's too much.
Well, hey there. Hey there, everybody out there, and People for People Land, and Chisnes Land, and so on, and, you know, I'm over here in Turtle Island just looking at the snow falling and listening to you and thinking, wow, you know, it's like, yeah, well, you talked about the war on pretty much everything except the war on your insanity and the war against your spirit and so on. We got all this stuff happening. But what's coming to my mind is how half the people are complicit to this stuff.
Yeah.
By the choices they make. You know, I'm thinking of what we were talking about it last night, like soon the spring break is coming up, right? You know, the spring break.
Yep.
Oh, well, all these kids are in school. Well, the poor things, they're all overloaded with having to study and having to be responsible and having to show up at class and having to, you know, spend their parents' money wisely by, you know, making sure they get a good education, which is never going to get a job because there aren't any jobs or whatever, but they're just going to get into the gerbil, on the gerbil wheel, and do their whatever supposed to do because they're aspiring to do what the authorities tell them to do. The authorities tell them this is the way you want to live your life because then you'll be happy, you'll have a lot, you know, well, in order to get over here, you got to step on somebody else. Well, that's okay because you want to win, you want to gain, you want to be successful. And then you have spring break, and so all these kids, these young people, go act like jerks. I mean, really.
Yeah, the girls are out there twerking on the beach and putting it on YouTube and on Facebook. Man,
well, yeah.
you know how mortified I would have been if my daughter would have went to the doggone spring break and she's out there flashing everybody and twerking people.
Well, it's like, okay, so now,
like,
you know, like, if everybody's half naked, you know, like, you know, you wear a thong bathing suit and little pasties, I guess you might as well say, they might as well all just go naked. But to me, it's like I watch these kids acting, they really, to me, acting like jerks. So the girls are all surrounded by boys who are holding all cans of beer, or whatever, bottles of beer, and the girls are doing their whatever thing. You know, what is that? I don't get it. It's mind-boggling to me. And then they trash the place.
Well, they have sexualized our children. You know, it's the only way to put it. With the provocative ways that they advertise to these girls, this is how you need to look. You got to have this fancy makeup and all this different stuff. And there was a time when, you know, a father would not allow his daughter to go out looking like that, you know?
Well, the point, what they've done really is this is all about the Me Too movement, the women's freedom, the feminist movement, you know, because, well, they made sure they held down and duct-taped women for centuries. They did that. Don't give them the vote. Don't let them have an education. Don't let them own any property or any, you know, money. They can't handle money, and women's brains are not like men's brains. I mean, I don't know. They did all this stuff to set the pattern, to set the pace for people's thinking and behavior. So now you have women fed up with it and enraged, and so now they're going to go the other way. They're going to go in the other extreme. I can do what I want. I can do what I want. I can display my body any way I want. I can get drunk, sloppy drunk, and fall down. You know, and then I can get, you know, then rape will happen, or I'll get beat up or whatever. Well, it's not my fault because I have a right to wear what I want to wear. I have a right to do what I want to do. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, the whole thing is a plan. I mean, you know, certainly, if you look at it as a plan, as an agenda, to really manipulate everybody and indoctrinate everybody into this insane behavior where they're just beating up their body, their own body, you know, taking drugs and taking alcohol and trashing everything and so on and so forth and
sure.
acting like they deserve to, they have the right to do this. We have the right to do this.
And on the male side of the spectrum, how do you expect a young 18-year-old or maybe even younger than that, all the way up to an older guy seeing this stuff on the beach like that? I mean, like, you know, men, they're dogs. I hate to say it, but, you know, I'm a man. I'm not blind. I see a beautiful woman. I'm married, and I stay, you know, true to my wife, but I'm not blind. How am I supposed to miss that, you know?
Well, then you have somebody sloshed with alcohol. Well, what are they going to do then? You know, how much control over themselves do they have? And, well, it's free-for-all. Hey, it's all free. It's right here in front of your face. There's no self-respect anymore, you know? It's just like a free-for-all.
Yeah.
There's no conscious awareness of yourself as a sacred being. Well, that doesn't even come into the equation. What the heck does that mean? You know, I mean, people...
I saw a video one time where every time somebody tipped a beer bottle or smoked some crack pipe or whatever, there was a demon that come out of that bottle and went down inside the person. And that may sound like, you know, something crazy, but in reality, you do things when you're drunk as all get out that you wouldn't normally do.
That's an analogy that actually in our culture, in Indian culture, there's alcohol and drugs have a demonic energy. The elders have told us that because it makes people do stupid stuff,
yep.
Very harmful stuff, and they're hurting their bodies, they're hurting themselves. So it's a taboo, you know. And what did they do? The first thing they did when they came here, well, they plied the Indian people with alcohol deliberately.
Yeah, and gave them whiskey and guns.
Well, whiskey, guns, and smallpox and blankets.
Yeah.
You think of the insanity of the ability of people to do things is mind-boggling to me. I don't know. There's this conversation about, well, we all have, you know, we all have an ability to do harm. Well, we certainly do, but you have free will and you have morals. But the morals are down the tubes. They made sure of that. So therefore, anything goes. You know, anything goes. It's a free-for-all, like I say. But life is not like that, because you have to think about what you're doing and the consequences. There's always a consequence. That's one thing leads to another, and so on and so forth.
Agree. That's why I said I wish that I had a magic power that I could just wave my hand around the world and everyone doing anything would have to see what the consequences of their action would be. You know?
Well, if you told a group of young men and women that, guess what, there's an agenda... It's been put in place millennia ago, an agenda to destroy you. And basically that way is going to be through drugs, through alcohol, through various other behaviors, you know, that are degrading to both parties, really. They'd look at you like you were crazy. You know, but we have these proofs. We've done this research, and we know the agenda, we know the plan, and we know that there's something very dark and evil afoot here, you know. I mean, we know this is like a battle. We talk about the spiritual battle. It's a battle for your soul.
That's it.
Battle for your life.
That's it right there. It's a battle for your soul. You know, the devil loves you. Loves everybody. The devil loves. You know, some folks think the devil hates them, but no, the devil loves you because he's building an army. You know, he or she, whatever it is, the dark side, the evil. You know. The rotten of the world.
Well, whatever it is, whether it's evil ETs, whether it's the evil government, the hidden government, whether it's the devil, whether it's Satan, whether it's Lucifer, it doesn't matter. There's something going on that is really dark, folks.
Yeah.
You have to look at that. I mean, how they're, you know, what they're doing to our children, you know, the sexualizing our children, the sex education is really down the tubes.
Oh,
and
it's
so
bad.
Insane.
There, I saw something on this new trend that's on doggone YouTube. If you go look up dark web unboxing,
I don't know if I want to do that. But
no, well, dark
I
web.
I get you. There's a lot of dark webs out there.
Yeah, but see, this is what they're doing. They're actually buying boxes off the dark web that they have no idea. They're mystery boxes. They have no idea what's inside this box, and they'll pay, you know, anywhere from $30 and up for this box, and somebody will ship it to them. I watched one individual open that one, and it was a black box, or it was actually a clear box. It had this black liquid inside of it, and inside the black liquid had a bunch of duct tape, and inside the duct tape, one of the deals inside the duct tape was a baby's pacifier. The other one was some old rotten teeth, and then from that there was a flash drive, and then whenever they cleaned it all up and actually put the flash drive into the computer, it's somebody showing a camera down this guy, past this guy's rotten teeth, and then going all the way down into his stomach, and has this creepy music playing in the background. But that's just one little creepy example of what people are checking out on this stuff.
I wouldn't buy anything
off no dark web.
No, but you have to ask, what's going on in that person's mind?
Yeah.
Nothing. What's going on with these people who do this stuff, who create this stuff, first of all, and what's going on with the idiots who actually buy this stuff? What kind of a lifestyle do they have, you know? It's like, that's what I'm talking about. They have no connection, no sense to reality, you know?
Yeah.
There's something missing in the system here, in people's minds and their experience. Something has been removed and indoctrinated into them that they would actually do this kind of stuff, to create this stuff. It's like, you know, the people that create the stuff of destruction, like looking at this bioweaponry thing going on we have today. We have this coronavirus, you know, and I've been looking at this because the first time it was noted what was going on there in Wuhan in China, my instincts kicked in. I said, this is something, this is not an accident. This is something going on here. Well, come to find out, it seems that, well, the Wuhan labs, there are bioweaponry labs, by the way. And bioweaponry labs, so they're not a scientific lab trying to find remedies for people who are sick. No, their labs actually creating bioweapons to kill people. That's what's going on. So Wuhan has these labs. Well, there's other labs in our country, too, and all over, that have these bioweaponry labs where they study and create and manifest, you know, bioweapons that kill people.
Well, the crazy thing about that whole deal is they don't care whether they accidentally release something that could literally destroy everyone on the planet and themselves.
Well, what happened with the Wuhan, in Wuhan, the labs have, it's been noted, it's probably more, but they have proof that for at least three different times, dangerous bioweapons were released. Now, whether they were released accidentally or not, it doesn't matter, but they have a history of this. Mistake. Well, the same thing happened in, I think in Georgia somewhere, or some lab here in the United States. By mistake, release this virus out. Oops, you know.
Well, there was a bioweapon back there where you was talking about how they give the Indians the blankets with smallpox on it.
Smallpox. That's
so
right.
This is not a new concept. This is pretty bad. You know, who would do that? What kind of person would do that?
We always go to that because I can't. It's hard for me. And you, too, I know, many of us, to wrap our minds around a person actually sitting down and thinking, well, let me see, how can I kill, you know, thousands of people, innocent people, children, old people, whatever, how can I do that? Ah, here's a good way. Let's do that. Let's just throw smallpox into these blankets because, well, the Indian people didn't have immunity to these things. Many thousands and thousands of them died when the Europeans came here. But the thing with this Wuhan, so I have a theory, I'm looking at this stuff, and I'm thinking, okay, this was a planted release on purpose, or it was not a mistake, but suppose the coronavirus was planted, like, from a foreign agent in Wuhan, by a covert foreign agent, suppose,
yeah.
Okay, because this coronavirus is definitely a bio warfare. Okay, but did it accidentally leak from Wuhan labs, or was it planted in Wuhan? Because what's going on there, 400 million people, think of that, 400 million people are on lockdown in China. So, what does this do to the economy? Ah, it takes down this country, doesn't it? The economy is like, forget it. When you have 400 million people all locked up and locked down, and unable to function, you know. Well, something is going on here that is very suspicious to me. And there's this, I passed the link into the chat earlier, but there's this Dr. Francis Boyle. He was the creator of the U.S. Bioweapons Act, okay? He created this, and it was voted on in the House and the Senate, you know, immediately. Well, he says that the coronavirus is a biological warfare weapon. He's making this statement, but he also says that he's banned from being interviewed from your mainstream media because he has blown the whistle on a lot of this stuff in the past. So he's basically, we're dealing with a biological warfare weapon here that, you know, was released. And I felt it's absurd that you have in this market, they said, well, bats and snakes brought this coronavirus, you know, well, the same thing they did in Africa. Oh, well, monkeys brought this AIDS. Oh, hantavirus down there in Navajo country here in the United States. Well, that was killing Navajo people. Well, that was brought by mice, blah, blah. Then there was another thing, a bird flu brought by crows somewhere down in New Jersey in a puddle. They found. I mean, the absurdity of this stuff, it just doesn't ring true to me. Well, so I'm not the only one, but I'm just saying that somebody released this. Now you have 400 million people. It looks like Brave New World. You look at the videos of them bringing people out of their apartments, carrying, kicking and screaming, and basically quarantining them in a prison. These hospitals that they just built are prisons. These people are, there they are, they're stuck in those prisons, and they're putting bars on people's doorways, you know, and so on. Now they have these Gigunda tourist ships, you know, you go out on one of those, which I would never go on. Anybody that gets on one of those, what do they call it? We're going to go on a cruise with thousands of people out on the water. We're going to go on a cruise. Oh, then there's all kinds of Legionnaire's disease that comes off of that. People are sick on one boat. I can't remember last year. People were vomiting and puking all over the place. And who wants to be on one of those ships? The cruise. Let's go on a cruise with thousands of people. Now they have these cruise ships that are quarantined because there's 16 people now. Started off with one person. Now it's advanced. And these cruise ships are docked. Though they're not allowed to dock. They're like being held off of shore. So now you have one just recently, just 2 days ago, in New Jersey here. A ship with about 16 people who have the coronavirus just was allowed to dock in New Jersey. So now they know the seriousness of this coronavirus. By the way, this Dr. Boyle was speaking. I was listening to the video of him in an interview, and he was saying, well, I don't really feel comfortable saying this, he said, but this may very well turn out to be on the level of the Spanish flu. Okay, in 1918, Spanish flu, which killed 50 to 90 million people, okay, and suddenly this little flu pops in, and all of a sudden people are dropping like flies. He said this coronavirus could very well come to that point. He was reluctant to say it, but he said it's looking very much like it might be like that. So you have this insanity going on here. These people, these scientists are playing games with people's lives. So they're creating and messing around with bioweaponry, okay? And guess what? When they come up with a bioweapon, they create a vaccine. So they do have a vaccine for this, by the way. And so why isn't it being released? You know, what's going on here? So there's a lot of questions I have about this whole thing. And, you know, here we, the people, you know, are being subjected to who knows what out there from these crazy people. Now, this is a big money maker. These bioweaponry scientific labs are big money makers, by the way, because they need funding. And these scientists need to be paid,
yep.
You know. So you have everything here is based on greed. Everything in our system is based on money, is based on greed. Yep. Who's going to get more money?
I want to read a couple things out of the chat room. Chris Maresh said in there, you can buy anything on the dark web. That's true. You can buy anything on the dark web. It's pretty disturbing. But this conversation sparked up there. It says Satan is Barry said Satan is the source of all evil, and then I think it's called Huge. Said no, Barry. Evil got a hold of Satan, and Barry said manifest wrong. Huge said whatever, laugh out loud. Then Barry said, tell me where evil comes from. So, not just pointing these two out for, you know, try to be, you know, controversial or anything, but you see how we can't even get together on, you know, it doesn't matter whether the devil or Satan or evil.
In the face.
Yeah, we could
right.
argue back and forth well, like that, but that
did the chicken the chicken or the egg, you know?
Yeah. But the thing about it is that is just a teeny tiny little fraction of what happens when we're all disagreeing with each other, unless we can realize that there's something behind there, whatever you want to call it, doesn't matter. There's some force behind this deal. These people that will do the most rotten things in order to fill their pockets with gold and silver and diamonds and jewels and all that.
And well, if you want to go to Barry says a fallen angel. Okay, if you want to go to the fallen angel, theory. Well, why did that angel fall? Okay, so Creator God created creation, created Lucifer, the light bringer, which that's what that means. Well, obviously, new to me, Creator knows everything. Nothing gets by Creator. Creator knows. Creator creating. Oh, I'm going to create. I'm going to create all these angels. Well, one of them is going to fall. Okay, and so that created, you want to say a pissed off angel because he wanted to be like God himself and so on, which is confusing to me because all of what Creator created, for we say we are, Creator created us in his image. So that means, well, what does that mean? So if Creator created everything, everything is sacred to me. So then this angel or this angry angel, fallen angel, fell and created, then was given permission to be in control upon this lifetime, this earth, for I don't know what, 1,000 years. I have no idea because I'm not read up on that. But you have this. There's no answer here.
No.
There's no answer. So God created Lucifer, so God knew that Lucifer was going to fall. God knew the mess that was going to happen here. God is, to me, this is like the big test. So evil does exist, whether it's from Satan or Lucifer or your neighbor or the president or whomever, politicians. It's like the ability that we have. Creator gave us the will, free will, to choose. You want to go down the dark road, go ahead. That's your journey. That's what you're going to get, and that's whatever's going to happen. Or you want to go down the other path. It's like this is what's going on, and yes, so God created the ability to be greedy. God created this choice. You could be greedy, and that creates a bunch of evil stuff.
Yeah, Barry,
for sure.
Barry in the Shaziz chat room said, let's divide society by forming lots of nations in one nation. That's a great idea. I think it's Two Dog in there said, lots of nations on Turtle Island, Barry, brother. And the whole thing is that these little differences between who Satan is or what Satan did or didn't do or the devil, who the devil is, who the evil is, all these different belief systems, ideologies, they don't blend well together. It's like you can't bring two cultures together and expect them to want to automatically conform to...
Why not?
Well, I would like to see that.
Again,
literally.
I'm saying it's the choices that people make. You can choose to be evil. You can choose to be murderous. You can choose to be kind. You can this is in our hands. It's like, but people want to blame somebody. I'm going to blame God because God didn't make things good for me today. Why did God let that happen, you know? Or why did the devil, why did God create the whatever? The devil is amongst us. Well, the devil is amongst us, but you don't have to be a friend with the devil.
No.
I'm just saying. So we want to blame somebody, but you are participating in this experience through your choices. However you are participating is what you reap. It's sort of like, you know, create your own reality, and we're all participating here. Whoa. And so we don't want to look at ourselves as responsible in some manner. We want to blame somebody else. So let's blame the devil.
Yeah.
Let's blame the Pope. Let's blame the president.
The thing is, they basically brainwashed and indoctrinated people into recognizing differences amongst each other to the extent where, you know, if I was a child, it wouldn't matter to me what color another child was. I could be sitting there, you know, unless I was taught some sort of deal in my life that there's a difference, I would never even know there's a difference.
Well, you've got to be taught these things.
Yeah.
I might recognize
the fact that person's skin color is different to mine. I might ask, why is your skin darker than mine, you know? But it wouldn't be to the extent where, you know, I think that I'm either better or worse than that person because, you know, I might think that person's more beautiful than me. I wished I looked like that. You know, whatever. But those are things that are ingrained in us by society. And I think that it's an intentional, divisive division or whatever that is put down on us to get us to do all this stuff. I mean, constantly fighting.
In my household, there was never anyone ever spoke about a prejudice word. No one ever spoke, neither one of my parents or any of my other relatives. I never heard any of them speak in a derogatory manner about anybody's color, you know. And as a matter of fact, I learned through my mom, through her compassion, she always stood up for the underdog, and I learned to do that, you know. And I remember an incident when I was a kid. I was probably about 10 or 11 years old, and there was this family across the railroad tracks down here that lived in, pretty difficult circumstances, and they were people of color. But my sister and I made friends with these kids. We'd ride our bikes down there, and we'd play with them and so on. But I was in school with this one girl, and she was being bullied and picked on by a bunch of boys after school one day, and I stood up for her, you know. I didn't understand. I don't like to see someone being mean to somebody else. I feel it in my own self.
Yeah, me too.
I feel that, and so to me it's a terrible thing. So I would stick up for you know, that person. And you have to be taught to hate people. You have to be taught to see, you know, what they're wearing something that is not so great or doesn't look really high end clothing. They're, you know, these people are bums or these people are crummy.
Yeah.
Same thing with color.
Unfortunately, I was raised in both worlds. I was raised in one section of my family who basically used a lot of racist terminology and telling different jokes like that, which I didn't find amusing or anything like that. But on the other side, I was raised up in love and to care about people. And so as a child, I'm conflicted, you know. And as I'm going up, through my life, and, you know, like the riots broke out down there in the city, and it was basically race riots that was going on. And so, you know, that starts to try to steer your mind towards, well, maybe this side of my family was right, you know. Maybe they do hate us. Maybe they want to kill us or whatever.
They might hate us, but where does that come from?
Because their family's doing the same thing to them,
well,
on the opposite side.
So if you have a standard where people of color, for instance, or whomever, whomever it is, whatever it is, if those persons are looked down upon, okay, this is a standard set by society. It's an indoctrination, in my estimation. We are indoctrinated to see people and to act toward people in many different ways. That's the system has this indoctrination pattern where we are controlled, mind controlled, to think certain things and treat certain peoples in certain ways. That's what's going on here. So
yeah.
This is an across-the-board indoctrination. It's so almost like it's an implant in your mind that when you see a person who's a little less well-dressed, where there's a reaction, immediate reaction, where you're disgusted by that person. So that person could be a beautiful person. That person could be the best friend you ever had in your life, but you already have a judgment implanted in your mind.
Yep.
You see, same thing with the persons of color.
They're going to steal from you, they're going to beat you up.
Then you have across the board that the particular persons in that category over centuries have been mistreated and violated and murdered and hung and enslaved and whatever it is. So you have the same thing with women. I say women have an enraged, they're enraged. Women are enraged. And who are they enraged at? Well, they're enraged at men. Okay, so then you have this pitted against each other, men and women pitted against each other, and that is not the way Creator made us. Okay, we need each other, we're a unit, you know, we have the sacred feminine and sacred masculine within us, and then each one of us are sacred. So, but the plan was to pit us against each other so that we are enraged at each other, so we beat each other up, there's rape, there's violence, there's murder, there's hatred, there's enragement. All this stuff is part of the plan, and people play the game. They are so just going along. There's no critical thinking. There's no compassion. There's no morals. So now you have a group of people who are enraged, these young people in the cities, you know, who live in squalor and poverty. They don't even have clean water, you know, and there's drugs introduced, there's alcohol introduced. And that's deliberate too, okay? And these, you know, it's like the people are being manipulated like little puppets, and they don't even get it. So now they're angry at each other. So now you have that side hating this side, and that side hating the other side. It's all an indoctrination.
Yeah,
the indoctrination is to keep us away from who we really truly are and what we could really do if we came together.
I agree. I want to tell a true story. There was a time when I first got married that my wife and I fell on some hard times, and we went to live with her sister. And her sister lived in a predominantly black neighborhood. It was basically what they call not the ghetto. It's there's another word. The projects. The government projects. They were like government housing, but it was predominantly black that lived there.
Yeah.
And so I came and gone there every single day, you know, and I went to work, I come home, and I spent time at night talking to these people. And some of the youth were real kind to me. Others of the youth were, you know, wanting to be violent. I had people that looked at me. I'm always feeling like I had to be apologetic to these folks. And you know, it didn't really dawn on me why, you know, I felt every time I'm around them, I'm always feeling like I got to be apologizing for something that, you know, I wasn't a part of. But I got to live within their culture, and I got to understanding a lot more about their culture than, you know, I ever knew before. They're not bad people, all right? And there are people that, don't like white people in that culture, and they teach their children to be the same way. But those out there who don't look at the white people or any other person like that, kind of like you and I are talking about, they were respectful. They shared meals with you. They had friendly conversations with you and all this kind of stuff. And you could sit down with them just like we're sitting down in a peaceful, loving manner talking about things. We had our differences, but we weren't hating each other. And so we were able to coexist with these people. And, you know, I actually, at some points, I actually was fearful to be there because, you know, I stick out like a sore thumb, so to speak. You know, but they didn't know my upbringing. They didn't know what type of person I was. But once I got in there and we talked about things, we found we had so much in common that it was amazing. And they wanted the same things I wanted. They wanted a chance to, you know, make their lives better, to raise their families and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I got to see their world, and I got to share mine with them. So
it's just like every other group of persons. You know, when you get to have an opportunity to know these people, to sit down with them and have food together, you see we're really all alike.
Yeah.
But the system, I'm saying again, the indoctrination to pit us against each other and to hate each other.
That's it.
To war against each other, to go to war against a nation somewhere else that we don't even know who they are, but we're told that they are animals.
But I know in my heart I wasn't born with them thoughts in my mind.
No, this is all indoctrination. We're not born in this way. We're just not. And so, like we always say, if you see these little babies, there's these sweet little, there's this one video I see every once in a while that pops up. It's out on the street. So from a distance, this one little black boy, he must be like about a year old. Then there's another little white boy, he's down the street a little bit, he's probably the same age. Well, the two of them start running toward each other with their arms stretched out. When they come together, they just hug each other and laughing.
Yep.
And so, well, what happened, there's the story of it, that these two little people, their parents met in the park, right? So they go to the same park. And these two little people became friends, they became buddies, and they played together all the time. And they hadn't seen each other in a couple of months. I don't know, there were circumstances going on. And this particular video is about them seeing each other after a couple of months and running down the street toward each other with their arms stretched out. They just absolutely love each other.
Yep.
You know, and I'm just saying that we have to keep remembering that whatever is going on that is vile and shocking and so on is part of the indoctrination that we are experiencing. It's been going on for millennia. It is to control our minds. It is to destroy our spirit.
Well, I'm thankful that I broke free from that bondage there. I'm thankful that the loving side of my family overcame the negative side of my family, because I'm satisfied with the man I am today. You know, I come down a really rough road to get where I'm at. I had to learn a lot of hard lessons on the way. But my mom, I give her full credit for it, because she was a single mom for the most part. You know, even when she got remarried, she still was basically a single mom, because she did all the work. She was mom and dad. But
yeah,
she always raised me with good morals, and I wrote something really wonderful and put it on the wall for her in a deal, and it brought her to tears every time she reads it. But, you know, she always thinks that she was too hard on me, and I said, Mom, You were hard on me as you needed to be, because if you hadn't been the way you were, I wouldn't be the way that I am. And I give my mom all the love and credit for what she did, what she had to go through in order to raise me the way she did, and me to be able to overcome all that other stuff from the other side of the family, or even the world for that matter. So, you know,
well, we all have that opportunity to overcome. And you know, we're all struggling to do that on many levels, and some people make it and some people don't, but the indoctrinations are so severe because it's generational. You know, growing up in an alcoholic family, I could have chosen to become an alcoholic. You know, a couple of my brothers did. I could have chosen that, you know, and then carried on that legacy. Something happened that I chose a different pathway. Didn't mean that I was free and clear of the legacy, that the emotional, the emotional harm and the spiritual, physical harm. But I had to work hard to rise above that and to free myself, because it is about freeing yourself from the rage, freeing yourself from the hate, freeing yourself from the hopelessness. You know, this is where we are today, where people feel helpless and hopeless, and that's an indoctrination too, because we are not helpless and it is not hopeless.
My father, my real father, was a bum, and so when I say a bum, I mean he was rotten. He didn't take care of his family. But my stepfather, he was more of a father than my biological father ever could have imagined. But the thing about it is, what I learned from my mom gave me the strength and the capabilities to say that I will never, ever be like my father. And I started being the best father that I could possibly be to my son from that point on. And I think I raised a really good boy. You know, he, don't get me wrong, he's had his ups and downs because he was out there in society as well. But in overall, that spirit that mom transferred into my heart transferred into my son's heart. My son is a wonderful, loving being. And, you know, he wants nothing more to be good to people and for peace and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm pretty proud of the job that I did with my son. I made mistakes, don't get me wrong. Nobody's perfect, but somehow or another, that seed that mom planted in my heart got planted in my son, and that's how you break that chain.
Well, I think the thing that I see is an issue is people victimizing themselves. Like, yeah, they're the victim, and they want to blame. They need to blame someone instead of pulling themselves up, you know. And
I could have done that, just like you could have done that. But
right.
you didn't. You broke free of that, and so did I. And
because
so,
you have free will, and you've used that free will to change the pattern. Everybody has the ability to do that, you know. But people are stuck in the blame game, and angry game, and raging game. And this is anybody they can find to blame, they're, you know, the problem they have, they will find someone else to blame. You know, it's like, what are the choices that you were making to make your life better? That's your choice. You could sit there and be the victim and blame other people till you're dead.
Yep, that's it.
That's your choice.
The thing about it is, though, it even goes into how we actually get to the point where we can change this world to the extent where, you know, the ultimate goal would be to end all the wars, to be end all the violence. But that's one heck of a task. But that doesn't mean that we don't have the capabilities to do what you've been saying forever and a day, is plant seeds, you know?
Yeah, well, we're planting all kinds of seeds. Some of them are not so good.
Yep, but I want to be the one. I want to be the one that, you know, like the Johnny Appleseed story, where he went around planting apple trees. He never going to get to eat one of those apples off those trees he planted, but somebody, some generation's going to be able to. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's what I got from the Johnny Appleseed story, was that, you know.
Well, yeah, that was a good story. That's a good story. There are lots of stories like that. My point is to. The seed planting thing is very interesting because because we're talking about the energy and frequencies that we exude every day. You know, like, our thoughts are a frequency, energy, and our thoughts are powerful. We know words are powerful. I think we all may agree on that. Words are powerful. And what we speak creates an energy, a frequency, and that has a power one way or the other, positive or negative. It's in our hands, but emotions are the same. They also exude a frequency and energy from us, and they impact in a positive or negative way. Emotions, thoughts, words, and so on. So to be a seed planter, okay, it's like when you plant a seed, when you're in a good way, let's say as a seed planter for something good. So you plant the seed, and sort of like as someone who speaks truth to lie, or someone who's a researcher, or someone who's a detective, or someone who has, you know, you want to say a goodness at heart. You plant the seed. You don't stand over the seed screaming at it to grow. It's sort of like, you know, it's logical. You plant that seed with a good intention. And you know that the waters will come, the sun will come, the Mother Earth will do her thing. And you move on and plant more seeds. So that's the good seed planter. Now, the other seed planter is the one who stands over the seed screaming, well, why aren't you growing? Why aren't you changing? Why aren't you blooming? It's like, well, people get all upset because people aren't awakening. People aren't waking up. People aren't changing. People aren't doing better. Instead, they're going down the other tube, you know. So it's like the seed planter knows that Creator and the Mother are in charge, right? That's what I'm saying. So you plant the seed. You plant the seed in the ground, and you move on, and you know the Mother Earth and Creator will take care of that seed. If that seed is meant to grow, that seed will grow and bloom into what it's meant to be. It's the same way with human beings. There are times, you know, it's sort of like we have to let go of what we think we have control over, because we don't have control over anything or anybody. It's like sometimes we watch our children, our children go off into the world, you know. Well, we want to follow our kids and we want to hold their hand. We want to make sure they don't fall over, fall down cliffs and get bumped around and beat up like we did. So we want to follow them and control their life. Well, that child is on their own sacred journey here in life. They will make choices. They will do things. They will learn, hopefully, something good from these experiences. That's the whole idea. So it's sort of like when we talk and we talk and we talk and we say, this is what we've come to realize, and we're looking at this aspect of things and this insanity and this controlling factor that we are all under, the brainwashing system and the mind control and the indoctrination, and we look at the dirty doers, the evil people, and so on and so forth. We talk about it till we're blue in the face, and people still remain the same. I'm not saying that people here listening, but I'm just saying because we're preaching to the choir, I feel. But there are people in our families, so we want them to wake up. We want them to see, don't you see, this is so obvious. Look at this. And they can't. They're unable. So then we get angry. Then we get frustrated. Why aren't these people waking up? These people need to change. Okay, well, you have to stop that nonsense and just pay attention.
Nail on the head, because that's the reason why I wanted to talk about that little bit of conversation that was going on in there. You could tell that not necessarily, you know, angry at each other, but you could feel a little bit of frustration that one person don't believe the same way that somebody else believes. But I got to go back to the original thing about how, you know, all these different things that we've been taught, even the things that we've researched and read, we can't take everything with a grain. We have to take everything with a grain of salt. We can't just take everything, you know, literally as factual truth, because none of us were around when any of this started. And so we're on this journey together. We're going down the rabbit hole. We're seeing things, and those who have wisdom can step back and say, hey, you know, this doesn't feel right to me, or that don't look right to me, or whatever. And we can start to formulate in the big picture of, you know, what's been going on through our lives. You know, I'm not saying you can discount every single bit of information you got, but there are hidden twisted truths and lies mixed in with each other in order to tell a story that whoever had a specific agenda wanted you to come away with this outlook on it. So, you know, that's why, you know, I'm not one that sits there and says that the Bible itself has to be, you know, taken, you know, that's it. You can only read that. That's the only book that you can read. I want you to read every book. I want you to read, you know, the ones that didn't actually make it into the book or whatever. I want you to read the entirety of the story. I want you to see both sides of the fence, because how else can you make a real conscious decision and determine for yourself what the real truth is in a world that has spent most of your life lying to you and deceiving you and propagandizing you to further whichever side's agenda? Well, it don't matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. Both sides of them have their dirty deeds. Both sides of them are part of the military-industrial complex. Both sides of the fence are either in some crime family or, you know, connected somehow to, you know, they call them lobbyists, but, you know, the way that lobbies work is you bribe somebody. You give them money for their campaign so that they can keep their seat of power. A lot of senators and congressmen will turn a blind eye to things just so that they can stay in that seat of power and have that notoriety. In reality, they don't have your best interest at heart. You know, the plan isn't to get out there and fix everything that we think needs to be fixed. It's to get out there and make the illusion that, yeah, you're a free person and you we're going to fix these things for you. And, you know, we're going to do this, you know, because we love our country. It's not the way it works. They go to the Senate, they go to the Congress, and they're automatically met with people that's telling them, hey, we'll give you this money, or we'll give you this job, or we'll support you if you help support us on this, or whatever. It's insanity. Neither side is blameless. They're all to blame, because they were there to work together, but instead you always hear the controversy back and forth between the two. You know, this one's corrupt, that one's corrupt, everybody's corrupt, that one's a racist, that one there is a traitor, whatever. And if you sit around and watch and listen to the Senate or the Congress during the times when they're together and you hear the opposing sides on there, you're going to start feeling something inside of you. And when you do, when you feel that, part of it's going to make you angry because you're going to know who's lying. You're going to know the truth. And when somebody's blatantly lying to you, it's going to make you mad. And that's part of the game. Both sides are there. One side's to look like the hero. The other side is to look like the villain. And then watch. If you don't pay attention to the news, years later, the sides will flip-flop. Now the Republicans are the villains and the Democrats are the creeps. Have you ever noticed there's a trend between that and a lot of these different reality TV shows or even little small mini-series of things, how the bad guy, at first you hate his guts because he's out there doing terrible stuff, and then the bad guy turns around to be a good guy, and then after too long, you know, after they wear that out for a while, then the bad guy goes back to the bad side again as a flip-flop, constant deal. Life imitates art. What you see in those TV shows is what you're seeing whenever you're watching the WWF or the Senate and the Congress out there playing the games. They're fighting in public and they're drinking beer on the side with each other. You know, some of the rotten things that some of them say or do to each other, then they turn around, they won't talk bad about that person. They'll sit there and say, oh yeah, well I know this guy. He's my friend. He's a good guy. I don't agree with what he did, but you know, he's still a good guy. But the fact is, it's a show. It's all a show. And that's what people have to realize. You're being played like a banjo. You know, your red team, your blue team, or whatever. And, you know, it's just mind-blowing to me that more people don't realize that. You know, and folks just say, well, my vote don't count. I don't trust my government. Well, it won't count if you don't make it count. At least you'll know I went and voted for the person that I believe to be right, you know, but at least do it informed, you know. Go back and look at the history. Go back and watch old news clips of what these people were saying 10 years ago as opposed to what they're saying now. This is how these folks play this game with each other. They will save news clips of somebody saying, well, I'm anti-abortion. And then years later, I'm pro-abortion. And then maybe a couple years more, I'm anti-abortion. You know, which is it? You can't keep your lies straight. That's why it's not good to lie. Because I'd be a terrible one because I can't remember the last one. So how am I going to remember what to say the next time I talk to the same person again? You see what I'm saying?
Well, I'm thinking of this phrase, the survival of the fittest, okay? Yeah. Well, we were indoctrinated with that thought, that it's survival of the fittest. So we have to survive, okay? So that tells us that there's an enemy out there. So we have to be fit. Yep. We have to survive, and we must be fit. Well, they'll give us lots of things to be fit with, but meanwhile they're killing us. But so what does that tell you? If you have to survive, somebody has to be pointed out as the enemy, and that is going to be against you. And so when you have that sense or that belief that you have to survive, you have to be fit, that means you have to step on other people. You have to see other people who aren't fit. That these people are the threat, or somebody other than you are a threat. So it's like that indoctrination of the survival system. You know, we need to survive. There's an enemy out there. They made sure they made somebody an enemy, many enemies.
Well, what do you think about the deal that, you know, how they're always wanting to tell us that we're animals, we're a species, you know, and so that kind of justifies poor choices by saying, you know, well, we got animal instincts in us, and in the animal kingdom, things are ruthless. The strong tiger will attack the little rabbit or whatever, you know. And so that's grained in our head, and we think that's the way we can justify, I got really mad, so I did this. Well, you got really mad, and yeah, you did that, but you actually made a conscious decision to do that. You didn't have to. You see what I'm saying?
Well, they have this thing now where so-and-so does a horrible thing to somebody else. They rape them, they violate them, they whatever. They mutilate them or whatever. Then their excuse is, well, when I was a child, I was beat up or I was raped. Now, that's what I'm talking about, the blame game, right?
Yep.
You're a victim.
That's it.
The victim has a right to victimize others. This is the system. You're given the right to victimize others by that.
Yep.
By being told, well, you were beat up. Well, my client, the defendant says, the defender of the person who's the perpetrator, well, my client suffered as a child. They were beat up or they were raped. Meanwhile, okay, they're an adult now, but... So that basically is saying, if you've been violated as a child, it's okay then. That's why you violated now as the adult. Well, so there's the excuse.
I was violated as a child. I was beat up by bullies in school because I looked different, and I didn't become a bully. I broke those chains of violence. I broke the chains of the neglect that my father beat me up when I was 3 years old. And that's why he wasn't with us anymore. My mom threw him out. But, you know, he never supported his family. He was always disruptive and all that kind of stuff. But because my mom was as strong as she was and a good woman that she was, and that she still is today, that she ingrained in me the love that's in my heart. I give all the credit to, you know, my creator and my mom. I mean, I feel like, you know, I know everybody else out there probably feels the same way. My mom's the best mom in the world. Nothing against anybody else's mom, because I bet your mom's wonderful too, but my mom, to me, is the best mom that I could have ever had. I was so blessed and fortunate to have my mom. I love her with everything I got. She is by far the best thing in my world. And so, you know, that's what my mom ingrained in me, and that's what I share with my family. We're always hugging everybody. And so you don't come into my house or leave my house without getting a hug. Because I want you to know when you get here, you're loved, and I want to know when you leave, you're loved, and I want you to call me when you get to the other side so I know you made it safe. So I really care. And my kids are just like that. And, you know, they'll mimic what their parents do. That's how you break that bond. That's how you break that chain of, you know, whatever negativity that happened in your life. Now, as far as breaking this negativity that's going on out there in the war world, the never-ending war and crimes, you know, it's a... Just like I say all this stuff all the time. This place didn't get this messed up overnight, and it's not going to, you know, outside of divine intervention, get changed back to where it should be overnight. But if each and every one of us start to look within inside ourselves to see what we can do to make it better, it makes it less painful for the next one in line. What do you think?
I agree. I think those that are controlling things, their agenda basically is to constantly create an enemy that creates fear in us, and therefore it's okay to go to war, therefore it's okay to do whatever, to punch people if they have, you know, a red hat on, or to punch people who, you know, or to call people Nazis just because they voted for someone. The system is indoctrinated everyone to look for an enemy. And they did that deliberately, so that gives people permission to behave like animals. So they're complicit. So the point is, again, I have to keep reiterating that there is a system, there is an agenda at work that we are all under. It's in our education system, the political system, the religious system, and the financial system. Every system that we are under, okay, has indoctrination tools. You know, and the fear that they are pushing gives us permission to attack another person for our survival.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, according to my faith, the book said, "Thou shalt not kill." It didn't have any any subsection A, article B, unless this or D or C or whatever like that. In fine print, paragraph E, It didn't have none of that. It just plain and simple, he said, thou shalt not kill. But we can justify killing because somebody else killed.
It's a simple message, you know.
Yeah.
It's simple. The thing, I was looking at this, I didn't go fully into the article, but I just saw the headline. This young man who was in the military, and he was one of those drone operators, right?
Yeah.
You know, those deadly weapons that just, like, they're, like, hunting from a distance, you know. Well, he became really enamored and kind of, like, destroyed emotionally about what he was doing, because he realized this particular target he was told about that he had to annihilate turned out to be a boy, a young boy. Of course, that wasn't what he was supposed to annihilate. It was a missed target, I suppose, if you want to say it. But this has happened before, the collateral damage of innocence, people. And he was so bereft and so beside himself that, and his superiors told him it wasn't a child, it was not a boy, it was a dog. And I guess he stepped away from this or resigned his position. I don't know what he did, because like I said, I didn't go into the whole thing. But you have these young people. You have our sons and our daughters indoctrinated into this war game, because it's a game.
Oh, yeah. It's the first-person shooter games glorify it to the extent where if you go out there on YouTube and you look up some videos of some of the things like in Iraq and Afghanistan, stuff like that, you'll actually see soldiers out there laughing while they're shooting somebody down with a machine gun. Why would that be okay? You know?
Well, you get because you're a winner then. You won the game. This is the system to set it up so that, well, you're on top now. You survived. And this is how you're going to survive, because that's an enemy. You're told that's an enemy. You told us a dog. You told us meaningless, right? This is the system. This is the brainwashing where people could do such atrocities and not feel anything, not feel bereft, not feel, just numb, dumbed, numbed. This is how they get people, you know, to do these atrocities for them. You know, their hands are clean.
Yep.
You know, they're successful. They got the money. You know, the money's in their pocket.
Yeah. Chris Maresh in the chat room said, nobody makes or breaks you as much as yourself. And I agree, because we become our own worst enemies. You know, when you start to absorb all this negativity around you and you start talking yourself down and feeling bad because, you know, I'm a bad person. I've done bad things in my life, and you never can let it go. You can't forgive yourself, you know, and you can't forget, you know, things that you've done. Your conscience is a powerful thing. And the more you feed that negativity about yourself, the more you'll slump down. Before too long, you're probably the one reaching for the bottle or the medication to try to take away that pain that you keep pushing down on yourself. And, you know, I say all the time, I'm like a sponge. When I'm around negative people, I become negative. When I'm around positive people, I become positive.
Well, I think that's typical. I think that's the frequency I'm talking about, the energies. So if you have a negative frequency, it's been studied that others' frequencies will drop to fit that negative frequency.
Yeah, and it's miserable.
It's very fascinating how that works.
I told a story one time how I was so really incredibly depressed. I was so depressed it was just off the scale, and I knew I was starting to get in trouble. I knew I was starting to have bad thoughts and all that kind of stuff. So what I did was I decided I'm going to go down and spend some time with my family. So I went down and went inside, and I sat down at the table, and they asked me if I wanted a cup of coffee, and I said, sure, thank you. And I got up and I got me a cup of coffee. I came back and I sat down and I started listening to everybody talk. And everybody was saying, well, this person's got cancer, and this person's got this disease, and this person's dying, and this person is doing this and that and whatever. They went around a table, and it seemed like everyone at the table had to top the last one's story. It had to be more negative than the one prior. And so I'm sitting there, I'm listening to all this, and I'm gradually sliding down in my seat. I'm starting to slump down because I'm absorbing all this negativity. Now, keep in mind, I'm already so doggone depressed that I'm physically ill. And I came down for some comfort to be around my family. Well, as I was sitting there, finally one of my cousins and his wife come in, and they're cussing each other up and down a storm, talking bad to each other, and complaining about this and that, and everybody's talking about how, you know, they lost their job or they didn't have the money for this or whatever. And the more this went on, the more I sunk down, and finally something deep down inside me says, you got to get out of here. And so I stood up and I said, I said I'm getting the bleep up out of here. And they all looked at me in shock because, oh, you know, I don't normally do that, you know. And I said, you know, I came down here because I was depressed and I needed to be around my family. I needed to have the comfort of my family being around. But after listening to all you for the last hour or so, I said, my life ain't so bad. I'm going home. And so I did. I left them speechless. But that's how powerful that your actions and your words are. You literally have that power. If you sit around and you feed that darkness, that's exactly what you're going to get. And if you feed the joy and the happiness, that's what you're going to get. And I kind of like being happy, don't you, Barbara? I would rather be smiling than frowning. I'd rather be laughing than crying.
Well, of course. You know, the thing is, people get caught up in this. It's sort of like becomes an avalanche, you know. It has an energy of its own. But it's sort of like you have to put the brakes on it.
Well,
like, you put the brakes on
something,
it. It's like,
something give me a kick inside and said, you got to get out of here for your own protection.
Well, it's the energy. It's the frequency of this that can make you sick.
Yeah.
It brings you down energetically, emotionally, physically, spiritually. You know, and people do get caught up in this. I don't know. It's, again, it's like the feeding off of negativity.
You know what I did when I was driving home after that? I was thinking about it, and I bursted out laughing, and I'm just laughing and laughing, and I start feeling really good and everything, and I'm thinking, yeah, man, here I thought I had it bad, but those folks, they got it worse. Was that the time when I snapped and lost my mind, or what?
Been there, done that.
Yep.
We all do that. But the energy thing, the frequency thing is so... It's important for your health and your well-being, actually, to make sure that you identify persons who are on the lower frequencies, because that can make you sick.
Yeah, there's toxic people out there. There really are.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to say ignore the people's illness or ignore what is going on in the world, but there's sometimes it gets like a fire, you know, somebody lights the match and before you know it, it's a roaring inferno of negativity.
Tell me if you've experienced this, and I think probably every family can relate. There's always one person in that family who's like really dramatic. And so you go there and, you know, if nobody's paying attention to them at any given time, they'll do something and be all sad and everything and maybe even talk about suicide or whatever. And then you'll go over there to, you know, because you obviously don't want them to hurt themselves or anything. You'll go over there and you'll talk them up and tell them how wonderful of a person and a good person they are. And somehow or another, they have the capability to maneuver that conversation right back around to where you started, talking bad about themselves again. Nobody loves me and all this kind of stuff. Have you experienced that?
Oh, yeah, of course. Because that's the victim. That person has a victim mentality, and they want to keep a focus on themselves. You know, that feeds them. Again, it's a validation for them. They need a validation, you know. They need to be fed. They need that. And so there are people around that will feed them for sure.
Yeah. Because you'll see for hours and hours and hours, they'll keep going around in a circle. They'll keep doing all this stuff, and they'll go from one person to the next doing the same doggone thing until finally everybody you know, just finally throws their hands up and says, well, if you're going to do it, just go ahead and do it, because I'm just tired of this, you know? That's one of the worst things, I think, you know, as far as, you know, trying to, you know, relationships or whatever, and for Pete's sake, don't throw alcohol on top of it. That makes it even worse. Man. I've seen some people get into some crazy old fights when they got drunk. Be all peace and lovable and everything, down some wild turkey or something like that, and the next thing you know, they're acting worse than a wild turkey. They're acting all kinds of crazy. And, you know, those are life lessons. But you gotta be able to recognize what's happening, otherwise you're gonna get snared in that trap. Those same two relatives that came in fighting and arguing, they are probably the most insane couple that you would ever meet. They literally get out there in the middle of the yard and fist fight each other. A wife and a husband out there. They've been married for so many years, it's hard to even imagine how long they've been married, but they spend their time literally fist fighting each other. They pull knives on each other. They pull guns on each other. They'll be standing over. One will be standing over the other one while the other one's sleeping in bed with a knife over them, thinking about killing them or whatever, but they never do. And then if you make the mistake of trying to break up the fight, they're out there fist fighting in the front yard, they will both turn on you. They have the most bizarre love-hate relationship that I've ever seen in my life. So I understand that when these two are fighting, leave them alone. Let them do it. there's nothing you can do or say to stop it. Because you can't negotiate with them when they're in that stage. They're non-negotiable. Nothing you say will matter. You're going one ear out the other. Or the other one will be offended thinking you're taking sides. So I learned that, you know, when those two go at it, it's time to turn your back and walk away and don't be part of it. Is that crazy?
Well, I think that's the best thing to do is to walk away from those people. They have a pattern that they're not going to be able to break because they feed off of each other's anger and so on. To me, I don't think it's love-hate. I think it's just hate.
Yeah.
I think it's just the energy that they need, they feed off of. Something is telling them they need that. That gives them something, you know. It's false. It's false, basically a false sense of self or a false sense of whatever it is. And a lot of people live their life like that. That's a sad state. I mean, who the heck wants to live like that?
Well, yeah, because their kids end up being real messed up. One of them got strung out really bad on drugs, and the other one was able to break the chains and get a really good job and be able to, eventually down the road own their own home and property and stuff like that and raise their family differently. So it's two examples of two different extremes. One of them made a wonderful life for themselves, and the other one to this very day is living a miserable existence. Went from a really beautiful young lady to, almost, I hate to say it, but like a walking zombie. You could tell how sick. And then the other one grew into a beautiful, responsible, family-oriented lady, and, you know, it's a sad story because I know the one sister loves the other sister, but they don't really communicate with each other because of their big division that, you know, one's from this lower world and one's from this higher world. You know, one thinks the other one thinks they're better than the other or vice versa. You know, and it's just crazy because all of that stemmed from those seeds that those parents planted way back then. His parents could have been, you know, poor as all get out. I've seen some poor people that raised some really, really wonderful children. And they grew into be wonderful adults. But I've also seen some really rotten parents raise some really rotten kids to this very day. He's been in and out of jail constantly. They live that lifestyle. And they think it's normal. You know?
But you can't. Then you hear of family people. I've heard stories, I'm sure you have amazing stories, that stunning stories where people will share what happened to them as a kid, but they survived it and they've made a better life for themselves. You know, you think, how the heck? that's a huge thing, you know. But that's a determination. That's a person's free will.
And there's another thing to factor into this because of the different, you know, like the lower class, the middle class or upper middle class, all the way up to the wealthy. You know, when you think about drugs in a poor community, drugs is a real thing in a poor community, but not everyone in the drug sales business is actually a bad person. Some are doing it to support their own habits. Some are doing it to support their family. Some are doing it so they can just get rich enough to get out there and get the goods like the rich folk boys got. But then on the opposite side of the spectrum, you have in the rich community, rich kids who have it all but want more that are doing the same doggone thing. So it's not discriminating between the higher class society or the lower class society. When you talk about drugs, fast money, both sides of the fence want it. And so that don't exclude none of these governors or congressmen or senators or law enforcement officers out there. They make some money, but they actually want more money because they want to live a more lavish lifestyle. And so they'll bend the rules because they're in the position of power to do so. So a lot of these dang things that we're talking about, the war on drugs, the wars, the never-ending crime or whatever, they're from the top to the bottom and from the bottom to the top. So how do you explain that outside of some dark force that wants to get in there and get people to do everything that they can possibly do that's dirty or rotten to each other? Keep you fighting, keep you selling dope, keep you stoned out your gourd. At that video that I saw where the demons were coming out of the bottles and everything else, you know, out of the crack pipe and going into the people, and that is the most realistic, even though it's just a cartoon animation, it's the most realistic and makes the most sense of all.
Well, you have people are unhappy. People are unhappy. Some you say, well, they have a right to be unhappy. You know, I guess I could say the disenfranchised or the poor or the people who can't feed their families or whatever, they don't always choose drugs.
Nope.
You know, but you have people who are wealthy, who have everything, choosing drugs. You know, these people, there's something missing in their life. To me, there's something missing here in a lot of people's lives, and that's a deliberate to me.
Yeah, one of the most amazing meals that I ever had was probably with the poorest family that I ever met in my life. And it stemmed from a story where I hadn't seen my real father for like 20 some odd years. And so when I got older, for some reason, I thought, I want to go see if I can track down my real father. I went to his last known address, and when I got there, I was surprised to see that this house was so tiny. It looked like a shed. It almost looked like what, you know, the tiny house community. And there was a lady and her son that lived there. And she said that she don't know where my dad moved to. And so, you know, me and my friend, we went out and we sat in the car and it was raining outside. Well, suddenly the little kid shows up and asks us if we want to come inside and warm up and have some food. And so we said, okay. And we went in, and the lady had been contacting some of her neighbors to see if they knew a forwarding address of my father. But we sat down in this little tiny house with this boy and his mom, and she made up some fried potatoes, and, you know, it wasn't much what, you know, she made, but it was the best that they had to offer, and, you know, some glasses of water and stuff like that. But these folks, being as poor as they were so giving that and so helpful that it was mind-blowing. And, you know, I'll never forget that.
Well, I think that my theory is that people are longing. People are hungry, and they're longing for something, and they don't know what it is, so they keep searching for it on the outside. They keep thinking, well, if I get a bigger car, I have more money, I'll be fulfilled, I'll be satisfying that missing piece. But none of that material stuff is going to satisfy the missing piece. To me, I think the missing piece is within. it's the self, it's the sacred self, it's the spirit within us, it's the connectedness to Creator, it's the connectedness to Source. It's the coming to know that you are significant. You know, if you feel you're not significant, you're hungry. You know, you're told you're insignificant, and that's a setup, that's the indoctrination. You're told that you're worthless and you have no purpose, and but you'll be worthless and you'll be of value if you have money. I mean, again, this is all based on that energy of money, of greed, of prestige, you know. But that's a lie. No matter how much you acquire, you will still have the hole inside of you. You will still have the longing and the need, where therefore you go out and you're working to get more and more and more and more and more, because you're trying to satisfy something that you will never satisfy by acquiring more stuff.
That's true. Most people realize that, you know, you can't take none of that stuff with you, so you spend a lifetime.
I don't know if they know that. I don't know what these people think that keep acquiring and scratching and clawing and, you know, their way to the top and figuring out, well, I have a product that I could sell that, some studies show that it might cause harm, but that doesn't matter because it will give me money. So I'm gonna make the decision to put this product out on the market. I'm going to do that. I'm just going to ignore the warning signs, okay? Because I will be able to get more money. I want a bigger house. I want a second house or maybe a third house. It's for my benefit to survive. I deserve this because I worked hard, because I'm a victim. So I deserve to do whatever I can, you know, to fill my life with all kinds of whatever meaningless stuff. You know, well, it's meaningless, but they don't know it's meaningless. But these people make determinations and decisions where they could put out a product that will destroy, you know, children or will do harm to the environment, and they make a determination. Okay, well, let's just ignore this study that is a warning. So let's ignore that, because look, the FDA is complicit. They say it's okay. They're going to ignore this one study that gives a warning, you know.
Yeah.
So we can make a determination, you guys. This is about money. Don't we deserve? We deserve to become successful. This is how we're going to be successful. Let's do it. Let's ignore the warning signs. These kinds of people, it just kind of like puzzles me and blows my mind. But then again, it doesn't, because I see that they are basically vulnerable to something very dark, and it's all about greed. Well, who leads the greed? Who whispers in their ear, it's okay if this kills babies, it doesn't matter if this destroys the water, look at the money you'll get.
I would like to sit down with the most powerful, the most wealthy family in this world. I would like just to sit down with them and have a conversation with them about the world that we live in. It'd be really interesting and enlightening to find out what these folks actually think. You know, there are people out there that believe that the world's overpopulated, Bill Gates being one of them. He talked about if we do a great job with vaccines, we can, you know, make the population smaller. That's not his exact words, but it's paraphrasing, and that's what he said. He basically said, if we do a good job with vaccines, we can decrease the world's population. Which, to me, that ain't what a vaccine's supposed to be for. But I would really love to sit down with the world's most powerful family just to see what they say, how they act, and all that kind of stuff. Would my words be good enough when I talk to them about different things in this world or different ideas in this world? Would they even listen to anything I had to say? They probably wouldn't even give me an audience. They didn't know me from anything.
Well, they wouldn't give you an audience because you're not in their club. They need their people because they know their people will agree with them. They know they won't get anybody adverse to their idea to make more money because the other person says, well, let me get on this with you because I want to make more money too. It's a club. I'm just saying.
Well,
it's a kind of type of, I don't know whether they're people. I say these can't be people. These can't be human.
Chris Moresh said the Walton family, is that what it says? Walton family?
The Walton family, they're heirs to the Walmart fortune, are the richest family in the world. Here you go.
Well,
go,
I would love to sit down and talk with these people. I don't know how I would even be able to get a deal to where I could literally sit down with them and talk with them. Whether we didn't even have to have a meal, or we could just sit down and just have a chat, and just talk to them like I'm talking about to you about different things in the world, about all the ideas that to make this world better, just to see what their response would be. And if anybody could set up a meeting like that, old Shaziz would be the first one to jump on any plane or train or bus or whatever it took to get there, just so that I could sit down with these folks and ask them a few questions. You know?
You want to ask them if the devil's talking to their ear.
Yeah.
I just think that, I don't know, to me it's sort of like a moot point. These people are in the positions they are in because they don't give a crap. These people are in the positions they are in. Was it Jeff Bezos? His lady looks like a demon. I just see her. She's like a demon, this woman. She could be a Jezebel spirit. A Jezebel, I think. Because the Jezebel usually breaks up marriages and basically hooks the male who has no sense of whatever.
Well, I might.
But anyway, they just bought a $432 million yacht.
Dang.
And I was like, I can't even wrap my mind around that idea. That $432 million yacht.
That's insane. But I think that I could very well be potentially biting off more than I can chew by wanting to sit down with these people, because I've seen all the movies. They might be vampires. I don't know.
Well, they are vampires. See, this is it. They're bloodsuckers. They're life suckers. They're spirit suckers. They're suckers. Suck of the life out of everything for their own pocket. I hate to sound like a nasty person.
So here's this guy that comes in with a huge heart and is lovable, and then suddenly I get axed.
Well, you know, they have a little thing that they do, and they're philanthropies. You know, well, they gave to this organization and they gave to that organization. But you can bet your bottom dollar that when they give something, they get something in return. There's not, you know, in this type of mindset, you know. And then they're part of the Clean Hands, group there, where they have to tell you, they have to inform their victims. That's the words of the Rothschild who said this. We have to inform our victims what we are going to be doing. Now, how they do that is, well, through a movie, like a fantasy movie, right? Well, they make it like a fantasy or a sci-fi or whatever it is, and people go to the movie and they take them in by this movie, and they don't realize that you are getting a fact, you are getting a piece of reality here about what's coming down the pike, but you think it's just a sci-fi, or you think it's just a fantasy, or you think it's an impossibility, it's just a story. But this is actually, they're telling you, because that's their code, the Rothschilds, the elite's code. He said, our doctrine is, our code is, we have to tell our victims what we are going to be doing. And they do, but people don't realize it.
I'm sitting here writing a message. Keep talking. I'm going to write a message, and I'm sending it to these folks. I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, well, they live in gated communities, my friend.
Yeah, well, I don't.
They live in a gated community with armed guards. You know, and I don't know. I'm sure they have a lot of people screaming at their door.
We can talk on Skype. We don't have to actually meet in person. We could talk on Skype. I don't care. I just want to talk to them.
Well, okay. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying. I'm trying not to dissuade you, but I'm just looking at the reality here.
Oh, it's like the President of the United States. I actually called when Bill Clinton was in office because I wanted to talk to the President. The lady on the phone said he's not available. And I said, well, when will he be available? And she repeated, he's not available. And I said, well, is there ever a chance that I'm ever going to be able to talk to the President of these United States? And she said, he's not available. And I said, so you're telling me that no way, no how will I ever be able to talk to the man that I voted in office to represent me in the United States government? He's not available. And that
well, you
was
weren't
old...
talking to a person. You were talking to an artificial intelligence that was just on...
No, that was a person. That was a live, that was a live person. But, yeah, that's the message I got constantly. I wrote a letter to Bill Clinton. I wrote one to George Bush. And I wrote a email to Barack Obama. I got basically a rubber-stamped email back. I got a actual letter from Bill Clinton and an actual letter from George Bush. And I wrote them about things that we talked about here, about making the world a better place.
And, did it make a difference in his policies?
Nope. But, I don't even think he really signed it. I think it was...
No, they don't even read those letters. Yeah. They have people read those letters, and they just respond with whatever... I wrote to Trump through the email through the whitehouse.gov. Well, I got a reply back. What I got was a request for money for his campaign. And I've been getting requests constantly now. It's been 2 months.
Yeah, that's about all I
don't want to give money to... I don't have money to give to any campaign. But I'm just saying that that's all that they want. If you can give money... Now, if you were a big donor... And you'd be right in their club. If you were a big donor, you'd be right in their club. You'd be welcome into their club.
Yeah, this is,
That's the way it works.
Yeah.
That's the club. You will not be even noticed. Nobody gives a crap about you. The little guy out here who has a good heart, who has compassion for people, who wants to see good things, who even has ideas about free energy for people. They know there's free energy. They know all about free energy. They've known about free energy for years. They don't want people to have free energy. That's not going to make money for them. That's how this works. And everybody's screaming about, the end of the world. You know, blaming everybody else for global warming when, they're all playing the game of the big corporations that are draining, the properties of the earth for money. That's how this works. So what do you do? So you have to come back to your own self, number one. You have to come back to your own community, number two. You have to build your community, connect with your neighbors. You have to find your resources together, and you have to say, hey, I can do plumbing. You need any help? Well, why? I can fix cars. Do you need any help? Well, hey, I have land here. Let's build a garden together. This is what we can do. You cannot expect that these people, this elite club, is going to turn around and open the door to you who has an idea that would help people for free. They're not interested in that. So that's, we have to do it for each other.
Right.
That's why coming together, building your own community, your own, getting to know each other in your neighborhood and your community and stepping out and opening your door to people and building something together. This is going to make the difference. These people aren't interested in building something together.
All right. So this is the message that I'm sending. And I ask what's the reason for your wanting to contact them. And I said, making our world a better place. And then I said, in the deal down there, I said, I want to help fix the world. What is the chance I can talk with your family? And that's all I put. So I'm going to send this right now. And I will let everybody know if I ever receive a response, even if it's just an auto response, like, thank you for your...
Now, who are you sending that to?
To the family, the Walmart family, the Walton family, whatever. And
right.
I'm going to save this into my favorites right here so that I can try it again. If I don't get a response, I'll put another lengthier message in there. And there's actually phone numbers. I might actually one day get on there and start calling these numbers. But I just want to see if I get a response, if I can get a meeting with these people to sit down and talk to them about different things like alternative energy and ways to fix the world and that kind of stuff, just to see how they respond, how they act. You know, if this is the richest family in the world, one of the most powerful families, if that's the case, see if they're really interested in fixing the world. I highly doubt it, but, I can't judge them until I sit down with them. What do you think?
Well, I think it doesn't hurt to try.
Yeah, well, like I said, I sent that letter to the president, And heck, it'd be amazing. Chris said, Shaziz, have them come on the radio station. I'd love to do that. That'd be awesome. Just come on here and talk with us. You know? So for
well, you know, I do believe in miracles.
We'll give it a shot.
I do believe in miracles. I mean, I know miracles do happen.
If they contact me and are willing to do a live interview on the radio here, I would be more than happy to do that. That would be spectacular. But, you know, I don't just reach out to just I reach out to everybody and his brother that I can. If I got something that I think can help somebody out, I've sent letters to senators and congresspeople, governors, and you know, different people in different organizations, like the energy department and government agencies and stuff like that. And I'm always trying to reach out and contact somebody to see if anybody's willing to try to do something to work on things. And, you know, to this day, I've been extremely unsuccessful outside of actually receiving two letters from the White House. That was pretty cool. I still have them to this day, but you know, they're just basically rubber stamped somebody's signature saying, yeah, well, we appreciate your support and this and that, and we're working for good things and all that. Didn't have anything necessarily to do with what I said. You know, wasn't addressing my concerns or anything like that. It just said, thank you for your support. Well, what if I would have been a flat out hater and I didn't support them? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I just tried to bring Barry in. Is he on?
I saw it said that he was there, but I don't see his icon. Let me see if I can add him.
Yeah, he said he's on. He's unavailable.
All right, I'll try. Yeah, well, it's dialing him. I can see it dialing him.
Yeah. Well, he's talking a lot out there in the chat. Maybe he'd like to join us.
Yep. But anyway, I like to try to reach out to these folks, because if they have the actual capability of making things happen, you know, the movers and shakers of the world, if they really have your best interest at heart and they really want to fix this world, we got the solutions. You know, maybe they could get somebody started on something, alternative energy projects or whatever, you know, funding research.
I'd like to hear from people to go out and do that.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear from people who take that suggestion and come back and say, hey, I reached out to my neighbors and we're starting a community garden.
Yeah. Would love to hear from people that have heard of one of our shows and took some of that and ran with it. How you doing, Barry?
I'm good, guys. How are you guys doing?
Hey.
I am here. I'm here. Yeah, good conversation. I've been enjoying listening to you guys talk.
Well, we're anxious to hear what you got to say about it all.
Well, the idea of community gardens, what a great idea. You know, it's something that you could talk to three or four people. That's all it takes. And a couple hours of your time every two or three days, and you've got all the food that you need to eat for the next year. So why not? I mean, the cost of food, we're seeing it start to really skyrocket now. So I think more and more people are going to start embracing these ideas, especially, like I said, we're really starting to see food skyrocket in prices. I don't know what you're seeing down in the United States, but up here, it's every time I go to the grocery store now, I see literally prices going up. So projections for food costs really seem to be going through the roof, and I think that will motivate a lot of people into doing what we're talking about doing here, community gardens, and trying to be a little bit more self-sufficient. You can grow a lot of your food that you can eat in your own house, man. In a corner, you can put up a tomato plant. You can put up berry plants. You can do all kinds of things in real small spaces, and it's actually beneficial to the house because, of course, it takes carbon out of the air and replaces it with oxygen, which is a pretty good deal.
Yep. Well, I like that whole guerrilla gardening thing. You know,
those are pretty cool ideas. Because if you look at the way that's set up, it's very easy to do.
Yep. There's a lot of vacant lots around in the city. So imagine if you if you went around and in the middle of the night dressed in your Batman suit and threw vegetable seeds over there and fruit seeds and all that, and then at some strange chance it just so happened to rain and then started to grow and there's food on the side of the road that people could get access to? Think about that. Neutrons, protons, electrons said, even if I don't support a particular political party, I don't, it don't matter the, I can't even hardly read. Thank you for your support, equates to, thank you for supporting the construction, the construct. It don't, matter, who you, vote for. Yeah, I get that. Somebody else read that. I can't see this one computer. I got to figure out a way to get those texts to be bigger. I'm getting old and blind, Barry.
Well, what he says here is, even if you don't support a particular political party, it don't matter. So, the thank you for your support equates to thank you for supporting the construct. It don't matter. Oh boy, it's hard to read. Who you vote for, the government still gets in, and if only, I'm bad at reading, too. I give up. I'm sorry, guys, I'm not one of those people that can do that. So. You should just phone in here and say that in person.
It says, if I own all the horses in the race, I care not which one wins. Just saying. We finally got it out, Barry. Woohoo!
Yeah, we got it out. There you go, folks.
It stinks getting old.
That's called amateur radio.
Oh, wow. I bet if Barbara or Patty were around, they would have done it eloquently. We kind of stumbled through that, but we got the point across.
Where's that Patty Walking Turtle today? I was kind of hoping she'd be in here today. I always look forward to talking.
I don't know. I'm guessing she probably slept in today. She'll probably show up late and say, well, I wish I'd have been here early.
Yeah, she'll show up at 5 minutes before the show's over wanting to talk.
Yeah. So, anyway, basically we started off talking about never-ending war and crime. And we're talking about how, you know, this has been going on for so doggone long. America's been in so many wars that even some that most folks don't even know we ever were in and all that. And so, you know, between that and the crime families and the war on drugs, the war on this and that and everything else under the sun, and the political divide between the left and the right and all the different genders that they have now and all the different, points of view on everything, people don't know whether they're coming or going anymore. People are just like, basically, they went so far down the rabbit hole, they're all freaking out. What do you think?
I think we've seen some pretty monumental changes in society in the last 200 years is what I think. And I keep thinking about and reflecting to society 200 years ago, what the backbone of society was, and how society, even though there's always been wars, there's always been nations invading nations, there's always been some kind of turmoil going on somewhere in the world. It seems to me that since the start of the Industrial Revolution that this is really ramped up in society, that because of our ability to communicate with each other, understand what's going on in other parts of the world, we seem to be seeing a ramp up in this what I call madness in the world. There's lots of reasons for that. You got to look at what they've done to the health of the normal person, and what they've injected into our body, and what they've made us eat, and what they're spraying into our skies, and what they're actually doing to the human body. And then you wonder why today people actually are walking around looking like zombies. That if you ask them a question, they're virtually stuck for an answer. Where does all that come from? And what's the end game for society? I know I got a pretty good idea what the end game is. What do you think the end game is? Where are they taking us? What is the ultimate objective to everything we see going on right now in our world? Question. To you, Shaziz.
Shaziz has stepped out a bit. So, I'm here. That's okay. A good question. That's a good question, actually. I kind of feel, I think I talked about the Industrial Revolution and what happened with organized religions and industrial revolution, when these things started to take place and be indoctrinated into the people's lives, they left the land. They went into the cities. You know, they were removed basically from nature, from the source of everything that we need. You know, not just the foods, the natural foods, and so on, but the energy and frequency of the Mother Earth, you know, our connectedness to Source. Because that's how I look at it, as that way. So I think that this is a plan, is to basically usurp our sacredness, as usurp all that is in harmony and balance, to basically, you know. And so we say, well, who would do such a thing? You know, why is that? Well, I have to go to something, some aspect of evil, some aspect of dark that wants to destroy the harmony and balance and this creation to me, which is sacred. So then you say, well, then go further with it. Well, what is the end game of that, you know? I mean, they're already leaving this planet, if they're not already left this planet, you know. There's settlements going to be happening out there. There's Space Force. Manifest Destiny was spoken about, by the way, in regards to Space Force, with Trump's State of the Union address. When he said the words Space Force and Manifest Destiny, I was like, oh, great. Well, we've kind of figured that. The Manifest Destiny was that basically the destruction of, you know, something so beautiful and harmony and sacred. Manifest Destiny, we have the right to basically destroy the resources on the Earth, the Earth herself.
Well, I'll say something about that Space Force. Every time I hear him say Space Force, I get this feeling in the pit of my stomach where I'm not like buying it or something like that. It seems like sci-fi. But either way,
well, it is things, but it's about war out. But it's a never-ending war, people.
Yeah.
And it's going to be the wars with cybots. You know, cyborgs. People are already putting chips into people.
I feel like that guy that's got the mop at the convenience store, and it's raining like heck outside, and it's all muddy up in there, and every time you turn around, you start cleaning the floor, and you put your wet floor sign down, and just about time you get done with the whole job, somebody else walks and tracks up a whole bunch of mud, and then you do it again and again and again and again. That's what I feel like.
This is about the economy. You know, Trump's whole premise of his running was to build the economy and make America great again. Well, how's he doing that? He's doing that with the resources, basically, of the Earth. And so this is about money, again, for a certain faction of persons, the club, the group. So they need the slaves. You know, you started about the timeline of wars of this country. This is never-ending wars, ongoing wars, and now we're heading up to space. And so they need the slaves, they need the soldiers, and they got everybody now hooked into the technology. Oh, whoopee, I'm going to get a chip so I can be a monster soldier. You know, I'm going to be this warrior, this soldier. To me, it's the same game. It's the war game, a never-ending war. Now we're heading out to space. You know, so it's for money. It's all about greed. It's for the people, certain people who are going to gain with Space Force, you know, the wars. And now you have other countries, China, who's being taken down by the coronavirus. Their economy's going in the tubes. The people are, 400 million people are in quarantine. And they're spreading this coronavirus around the Earth. You know, to me, that's biowarfare. You know, again, and we've been experiencing biowarfare on many levels, through fluoride, through chemtrails, through vaccines, through big pharma. You know, they've been just doing us in, but it's a certain amount of population. Like when the Spanish flu came in 1918, well, it killed 50 to 90 million people, and then it ended. It came, boom, and it went, boom. Why do we have a flu season? That's my question.
Well,
why do we accept that there's a flu season, and all of a sudden flus are here, boom, and then they're gone? Next season, here it comes.
I think that nature does its own thing.
You're laughing, Barry. Why are you laughing?
That's a good question. You know. Okay, it's flu season today, guys. Everybody start getting the flu, and as soon as the season's over, we'll let you know, and you can all go back to
Then it's done, right?
Yeah, done. Okay. Nothing to see there, Barbara.
Come get your shot. Did you know that they now have drive-thrus where you can go get your shot at a drive-thru?
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Oh, McDonald's is
yeah. You stick your left arm out of your car window. The needle comes out, and it's a cyborg that sends the needle, gets your shot, and drives
off. That's crazy.
One arm gets the needle, the other one gets the Big Mac and large fries and that strawberry milkshake, man. Don't forget that.
Hey, yep.
McDonald's is giving flip shots plus the Big Mac.
We get both ways, man.
French fries if you get a flu shot.
I like that commercial they used to have that said we take their money at the first window, and if the order's wrong, who cares? We already got their money.
Well, I had to ask this question because I'm reading about the Spanish flu and I'm reading about the coronavirus, and suddenly I read the words the flu season. I said, wait a second, flu? Yes, we have a flu season. What the heck? Why do we have a flu season? Everybody knows flu season is coming. There's a certain time of the month. We should probably investigate that. It's probably a patent for, you know, flu season appears at this point, and everybody gets the flu or drops with the flu or doesn't get the flu, and everybody goes crazy and gets their flu shots, get the flu anyway, and then flu season's over. Boom.
Go
then it'll come back next
shot.
Year.
Go get your flu shot, folks.
So, essentially...
Oh, man.
Essentially, they're going to get us either way, one way or another. They're going to get us, and they're going to corral us around. I almost feel like, you know how the cows, they got that little tag on their ear, you know, and maybe a brand.
Looking at tags on our ears.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that one doggone bit. They talk about a one-world government, and you can't buy, sell, or trade without that mark, and so... You know, you think about how society is getting more closer to cashless and all these different things about coronaviruses and different diseases that we keep hearing about. One day they'll say, well, we can't give you paper money anymore because you're going to transmit diseases back and forth to each other. However, if you think about this whole deal, do you realize back in the old days whenever one of the kids came down with the measles that the other parents would bring their kids around to get their get them to have it too?
Chickenpox and measles.
So that they could get over it at an early age. That was a thing. And that's how nature vaccinates you. Your immune system builds up an immunity to these bugs. But the way that they're doing it nowadays, you know, they're basically giving people the flu with the vaccine, and then some. There's things in there that there were scientists that were saying that they didn't know if these vaccines
were
safe.
They don't know what the heck they're giving us.
Well, of course, and then autoimmune diseases are going rampant. Well, figure it out, folks.
Yeah. My mother every year replacing
natural immunity with something coming out of a laboratory. Your body's not designed to work like that. I had every childhood disease in the world when I was a kid. Everything, you name it, I had it. And I'm healthy as a bull.
Had mumps, measles, and chickenpox.
Yeah,
I had everything, Barbara. There is one out there that you could name that I didn't have when I was a kid. But you know what? I'm alive. I lived through it, and my body built a natural immunity, and that natural immunity has carried me through my lifetime. But what we have now is children that are vaccinated to a point where their immune system has become autoimmune, and it's attacking its own body.
Right.
All those disorders are from immune system deficiency and the attack on the immune system. Everything you see right now is immune system disorders. You got to realize that everything they're doing is designed to attack that immune system, making us very vulnerable to just about any kind of disease that's out there. And if they haven't found one, they'll make a new one.
Yeah, that's it. That biological warfare thing, that's insanity. What if it goes
awry
one day?
Look how
wicked
Irish this is.
What if it goes awry?
Well, it's all about money. There's big money in biowarfare. Scientific labs, they get grants. The scientists get paid a lot of money. They need more scientists because they created this biowarfare.
Not only that, you can sell the cure.
It might be deeper than that, Barbara. I think, you know, this virus could actually be a mechanism to get society to give up all their freedoms.
If you,
well, I think it's an intelligence. I think these are intelligent entities, frankly, because I know the guy who was doing studies, this Dutch, I think he was Dutch scientist, a while back I was reading about, he was doing studies on the black goo and also on Morgellons. And they did these studies looking at this stuff under high magnifiers, looking at these things that were coming out of people's bodies, the Morgellon thing. And he said that it was an entity. It looked, and I saw that. And the face, I saw that. It's like a critter, like a creature, like a spider entity. It's an intelligence, and I think these are intelligence. That means they're alien. They're not from this planet. They're from alien. But you know, then you have these scientists, and you have certain governments who are in cahoots with some of these aliens.
But the fact is that nanotechnology now is at a point where they can put things into your body and you don't even know that those things
that's
are
right.
going into your body, period.
What do they
need to do if they want to control society is spray these nanoparticles out of a plane and everybody's going to be taking them in.
Yeah. Like I say, if you create the disease, you can sell the cure, so there's a money-making business just in that alone. But if with the nanotechnology, and you get that in your body, what all could you do with that? You know they got the 5G thing coming out. Could they actually communicate with nanotechnology to, you know, basically send like voices into your head to make you seem like you're crazy? You know, there's a conspiracy out there about how they actually have this equipment where they can literally transmit, like that billboard we talked about a long time ago, they can transmit sounds into your head and you'll hear voices in your head telling you to do something or whatever, you know, more than likely something not good for you or somebody else. But think about that. If we had the nanotechnology in us that was able to communicate with our bodies, and they could tell where you was at any given time. It's like those doggone chips inside the cards. How do we know those aren't tracking chips? How do we know that every time you walk into a store...
Well, they are tracking chips.
Well, you know, I know they can track you when you slide it in the deal, but what if they could actually track it when you walk through that detector as you're coming and going from that store?
I believe that.
I believe they have things that we have no idea about, Shaziz, because we've said it many times on your show, that their technology is years ahead of what we know. So what really is going on behind the scenes? And would the public be able to know about it? No.
So let's look at the...
That's a deep rabbit hole.
Yeah, so let's look at the... So we know also that the body has its natural healing mechanisms. We know that there are trillions of cells within our body that are an intelligence, and that what you believe in and what you focus on, those cells react accordingly, right? We know that. We know that there are natural medicines, you know, out on the Mother Earth. The Creator gave us everything we'd ever need. And we also know the other side. The other side is that they're corrupting our ability, or attempting to corrupt our ability to self-heal. You know, they have people being radiated you know, the cancer treatments are killers. The foods that are eaten, the air particles, we have all this stuff that our bodies, you know, it's pretty extraordinary how most of us are actually doing okay, you know, and so on. But I'm just looking at this stuff that, so if this is an intelligence, you know, that they are implanting in us through these bio-warfares, or from a source, maybe an ET source or whatever, the Morgellons, for instance, that was an entity that they identified as pretty creepy. But if we have, we talk about this ability that when you talk to your organs respond accordingly, that you can self-heal, you know, from the natural, the earth's medicines, as well as our own thoughts and our own ideas and our own minds and our own manifestations and the light and the frequency that we are when we're related to Creator, when we're related to Source, the Divine Source. And we have a spirit within us. They're trying to kill that spirit within us and the power and the abilities that we do have, you know, to be in natural harmony, to be in balance and natural harmony, right? So,
I got a I got a book that everybody should go out and get, Barbara. It's cost me $39 for the book, but it's called The Encyclopedia of Natural Healing.
Yeah, we have that.
You have that one?
Oh, yeah.
Phenomenal. Yeah. That book alone is worth $1 million.
I know. So, but I'm saying that there are solutions, there are tools that we have, and I think that what I'm saying is that one of the main tools is that the way we talk to our bodies, our body, our organs respond what we believe in. If we believe a doctor tells you, sorry, you have diagnosed with this, we can't do anything, and you've got to, you know, 6 months you're going to die, well, then you take that on and you believe that. That you're talking to your body. You're basically brainwashing and indoctrinating your own organs to fail and your immune system to give up. So, I'm just saying, we have tools, we have abilities, and we're not talking about this stuff to put fear in people. We're talking, you know, basically so people become aware and awake to what is really going on.
Well, there's a lot. Man, there's parasites out there. A lot of people, this one talks about toxoplasmosis or toxoplasma gondii. Basically, something that you can get out of cat litter or whatever, you know, when a cat, through the cat species or whatever. But there's stories out there about how these mice will be infected with this, and they will literally not be afraid of cats, and they'll walk right straight up to a cat, you know, of course, at their own peril, if the cat decides it wants to. But it says that 60 million people in the United States are infected with the parasite, and they don't even know it. That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. And if that's the case, what else is going on that we don't know about? Is this?
Yeah.
That makes you ask a lot of questions, doesn't it?
Well, if we listen to our bodies, again, here's the thing. They dumbed us down. Critical thinking is out the window. They dumbed us down to pay attention, to use our sensory perceptions, our original abilities to listen to the body, to communicate with our immune system, you know, to think positively. Certainly they've taken that away. You know, they've put terror in everybody and fear in everyone.
Well, there's supposedly natural remedies out there to get rid of parasites. So that would be a plus that somebody could use as a defense against that.
There are natural remedies. I use those natural remedies. I mean, my body tells me when there's a parasite. We are more susceptible to parasites in these days than ever before. And that's why people see the gut. It's like the gut is the seat of all of our health and well-being.
So let's sum this up a little bit. So we got all these never-ending wars and crime. We got people out there that are literally genetically modifying nature's food. We got people out there tampering around with doggone viruses to make bioweapons. We got people out there. This world has lost its doggone mind, as far as I'm concerned. You know, so. How are we going to defend against that? Literally. You know? I think the only tools that we got is what you and I were talking about earlier, Barbara. You know? Our faith, our building ourselves up and taking care of ourselves to go out there and actively seek alternative medicines that, you know, work. You know, I wouldn't suggest an alternative medicine to anybody unless I tried it on myself. I mean, you know, like I use hemp seed oil because I had some problems that gave me symptoms that could either be colon cancer or enlarged prostate. Of course, at my age, that's one thing you got to worry about. Well, it has symptoms such as you have to go to the bathroom a lot. And so I started taking hemp seed oil a couple years back, and I haven't had that problem since. Not near to the extent. Now, keep in mind, when I wake up in the morning, I really got to go. But I'm not getting up every hour on the hour like I was, and that's what I used to solve that problem. So I use
well, here's some. Yeah, well, here's some simple things we have right in our own home. Is the best herbs for parasites: fresh garlic, cucumber seeds, papaya, clove, raw pumpkin seeds, turmeric, and ginger, cayenne, and the green hulls of the black walnut. I'm going to pass this into the chat because there's ways to prepare these things.
Cool.
And this is important because people don't realize that the gut is the key to our health and well-being. Every part of our body, really, it's the gut. And if you go to the pharmacy and you get crap because you might have a gut issue, it's not going to help. Cloves, for instance, you have to take cloves because cloves kill the eggs of the parasites. You could get rid of the parasites, but they've already laid eggs. So you'll get back, so the parasites will grow again because they have the eggs. It's the cloves. They're terrible. They're pills of cloves. I don't like to take them, but if you want to get rid of the eggs, get the cloves. I'm just saying. But this is important for us to know this, how to have a healthy gut. It's very important.
Well, we need to definitely get back closer to what nature was to doing because, you know, our immune system, you know, it was perfect when it was first created or whatever. And there's no improvement you can do over what nature or God did. That's as far as I'm concerned. But a lot of folks, they trust that white coat more than they trust somebody who says, yeah, you know, natural remedies and stuff like that. They'll literally go and have people destroy their immune system with radiation therapy or radioactive medicine instead of actually trying. You know, I was always thinking the doctor was there to do no harm and to make you healthy as if he could. But I think the doctors, they should be putting every single possible option on the table. Look, this is what I think. This is what we're going to do. This is what other people have done, all the way down to the, you know, to the alternative medicines or whatever, and give everybody options of what they want to try first. I would rather try natural remedy before radiation anytime. You know, I've seen what that does.
Part of the indoctrination to believe that doctors are gods. That's part of the indoctrination, and that your body or your own intuitive, information, your own inner guidance and wisdom has some information for you to help you.
You're right, Barbara.
I was,
you know, raised to believe my doctor was the greatest thing in the world. In fact, I remember as a child.
Well, you never questioned the doctor.
The doctor was kind of like King Kong of the hill, man. That's it. You know, whatever he said went. But now my opinion of doctors is very, very low because I call them the biggest hypocrites in the world. That's exactly what they are.
I questioned the doctor at the VA, and he actually got mad about it and was kind of really rude about the whole thing. I told a story on Knights of the Round Table a while back about my wife and I went to an auction, and she bought a purse. Well, inside that purse turned out there were some old diabetic needles in there. And she brought them to me, and she asked me, well, what should I do with these? And I said, well, I will dispose of them to make sure nobody gets hurt. Well, when she handed them to me, I actually dropped one on the floor, and when I went to pick a dang thing up, one of them stabbed me in my finger. So now what do I do? I don't know whether these were clean or whether they weren't clean. Anyway, to make a long story short, I went down there and they told me about, they got this series of three shots. They said that one of the warning signs, because I was reading the papers in there, one of the warning things is that you could actually get hepatitis by taking this, but if you get all the way through the whole entire deal, you'll be immune to it. And so I went to ask the doctor about it. Well, the doctor got mad because he thought I was like an anti-vaxxer or something like that, and was, you know, basically laughing at me because I had concerns. Well, that doctor should have been taking my concerns seriously, because that's a serious deal, get hepatitis. And so I ended up taking the deal, went through the whole series and everything, so according to them, I'm immune to hepatitis. But it was the process of how they literally laughed in my face because I'm the doctor and you're just an idiot or something is what I felt, you know. But I don't trust them. I don't trust the dang medical industry. I don't trust the law enforcement. I don't trust the government. I'm not anti-government. If we want to have a government, then at least we need to make sure that that government is kept in its place and not out of control. But we're living in a time where just about every government and every nation is completely out of control. They're doing things and getting by with all kinds of things. They're being bribed. I mean, it's worse than the mob. I mean, it might be the mob behind there running the government. How do we know? You know?
Well, they're not working in our best interest, obviously, such as this, because if we look at numbers of sicknesses in North America, we look at what's actually going on in our society right now, We're the sickest people in the world, and these numbers are going through the roof. So what is going on in our society?
Yeah.
There's actually vaccines on the market today. If you take the insert out of the bottle of the vaccine and read the side effects of that vaccine, it states there right on the insert that one of these side effects is the possibility of autism. And they're admitting it openly on their vaccine inserts. And yet people still want to stick these things in their body.
Or
their children.
The
flu shot, another example. The flu shot's insanity.
It's
How can you treat something this year with the virus from last year? How can you do that?
Well, they even admitted, the CDC even admits that the vaccines that they put out don't
15%.
Well, it's not always for that particular flu virus, because they don't know what the flu virus is. But they have to prepare these vaccines, because there's a flu season. So they're already
prepared. Lots of money to be made, Barbara.
But you would think, you would literally think that if a common sense person, a science guy, knew that vaccines and stuff like that could be dangerous, or even to genetically modify, you know, making bio weapons or whatever like that, that something seriously could go wrong. What kind of madman would actually take that chance that that doggone thing that they just created would get free and basically kill all of humanity?
The one who's looking to put money in their pocket and tells their family.
It's all about money, obviously.
You know, what's his face? Gates doesn't have his children vaccinated.
Well, see, he wants you to vaccinate your children. That's a
You know, last year, Scissors, the Vaccine Industry Compensation Board in the United States saw a 400% increase in claims. And of that 400% increase, it was all related to the flu vaccine.
You know what? If I go to the doctor and he wants to give me a shot, he or she wants to give me a shot, I'm going to say, you take one first, and then I might think about following.
Ask them if they give their own kids vaccine.
If that doctor hesitates...
Put them on the spot.
Yeah. They put fear into people. They have this new vaccine. Excuse me. This new vaccine for young girls. Because these young girls might get uterine cancer of the uterus, I think it's that. They haven't yet. They don't even have their, you know, moon time. They haven't come into, you know, through that yet. But they're putting fear into people, so their girls, their little girls, get this vaccine against a possible future uterine cancer. And what the side effects of what this vaccine is doing is, you know, is horrible. So there's been lawsuits around this. There's been severe damage done to these little girls because their parents are told, well, you don't want your daughter to get uterine cancer, do you? Well, so give her this vaccine.
Jeez,
and they're putting
crazy
fear into people. You know, I was just looking at this documentary on the epidemic of OxyContin and how medical doctors, you know, have been prescribing, how they just prescribe OxyContin without even, you know, basically caring about what's going on. It's a pain, you know, it frees people of pain. It's euphoric. It's like cocaine. It's like a double, triple dose of cocaine, this OxyContin. And how the pharmaceutical company, the family that actually, this was their company, knew all about the side effects, and the people were overdosing and dying. The death rate was like unbelievable. And it's still today, but it's an epidemic of this OxyContin addiction. And doctors are pushing this for money. There's big money.
Have you heard about how they were using growth hormones in cattle, and even in the milk industry, to make the cows grow more milk more milk, and that some folks were doing research and saying that the young ladies were maturing way earlier.
Yes, and young boys are getting breasts. Boys are growing breasts, and and girls are, you know, coming into maturity much earlier. I mean, this is what they're doing to things, you know, for money again. Well, we need more milk. We can get the cows to milk more, give us more milk. We can sell our milk quicker. This is all, again, it's all about, based on greed, it's about money, 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 money. That's what they're doing. They don't care about the your child. They don't care about the people.
If anybody can figure out a way that we could, as a society, get away from money, such as maybe going back to bartering or something like that, that would be the only way.
Well, that's why I said, come to you and get your community going, where you can barter. Everybody can pitch in for the community garden. Everyone, gets product for their work time. You have a skill, share your skill. That other person has another skill. This is bartering.
Yep.
You know, this is what we need to do to get out of the system. Step away from the matrix. Get away from this controlling factor, the mind control. Every part of our lives is controlled and indoctrinates us into believing that the authorities have all the answers. It's across the board.
Well, the biggest suggestion that I can make to everyone out there listening, I know you got your own belief systems, but whenever you talk to others who have a different point of view, don't get mad at each other because the information doesn't match what you believe or whatever, you know, because none of us really know the truth. In the long term, we don't know the true history of anything, but we live, Barry and I, we come from a Christian faith. And we live by faith. That's what we do. That's what works for us. And so, you know, don't hate us for that kind of deal. Neither Barry or I is trying to slap you upside the head with the Bible and tell you better read this or you're going to go to hell or anything like that. We're just trying to live our lives and lead by example. But if it wasn't for that faith, I can speak for myself. I'm sure Barry would agree. We both would go insane. Because all of the things that we've talked about here today, this doesn't even scratch the surface of the mess we're in. But while you guys are having differences of opinion, you take from example what happens here on the Knights of the Round Table. You know, Barbara's from more of a traditionalist view. She's got a little bit different views, but they're not that much different than what we talk about. But either way, we can sit here and have these conversations. We're not getting angry with each other because we have different points of view. And so that's why the Knights of the Round Table to me is so amazing, because of that fact that we can bring people from all different backgrounds and political views and we can talk through this thing. This is what we need to start doing. And like Barbara said, get into your community. Barry said it many times as well. Get in your community. Start working with your neighbors, you know. Do something productive to make at least your little corner of the world that much better. And that's how we fix this thing, because these folks out here that have the money, that have the power, they don't care about you. You make them money. That's the simple of it. I don't think that they want to kill us all off per se, at least not directly. If anything, it'd be a soft kill. Because I think they want to slowly kill us, because the longer we last, the more money we'll have to pay the doctor, the more money we'll have to pay for medicine, and the more work we'll get done for them. There's a deal out there where every single person out there has a Social Security number, and behind that Social Security number is some hidden bank accounts. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, because I haven't been able to figure out or look deep enough into it. But that means that everything that you do in your life, they're making money on. They got a huge bank account that money would actually probably belong to you, but whenever you were born, you were given this birth certificate, and that account was supposed to be for, you know, you in your future years when you got old enough to be able to do it. I don't know the whole story, you have to look into it, but it's a thing that you hear about out there in the conspiracy world. If that's the truth, then a long time ago they said, if you had the old Social Security number, the old Social Security card, that on the back of that Social Security card, there was this red number on the back. And you could actually go to the New York Stock Exchange, and you could, or any one of the stock exchanges, and you could run that number, and it would come back with companies that own that stock. I thought that was crazy, and I actually did that, and I came back with Raytheon. Do some research into Raytheon. That's an insane deal right there. Part of the military-industrial complex, right up there with Halliburton and all that. Why would somebody with the company of Raytheon have an investment in somebody like myself? I'm nobody. I'm just a guy who gets on the radio, mouths off about the world, and says we can fix it and that kind of stuff. So to most folks, I'm probably a little bit on the crazy side. It's all right. but I believe in what I'm doing. But either way, whether it's conspiracy or not, these folks make money whether you're in jail, out of jail, whether you're protesting or not protesting, whether you're watching the Super Bowl or whether you're out there working, you're getting taxes, you buy your car, you got to pay licensing fees, you got to pay taxes every year on it, you got to pay taxes on your land, you got to pay taxes on everything. So you're not really truly free, and you don't truly own anything with exception of the body that you walk around in every day. Your soul and your spirit, your being belongs to you and you only. And there is only ever going to be one of you. There might be a million people named Barry. There might be a million people named Barb, but there will only ever be one of each of those that can do and say the things that they do. They are that unique. And that means that they are that special. Every one of us is a piece of the puzzle. We're one of the gears in that machine that makes this world tick. So, you know, take it how you want it, folks. We live in a messed up world. It didn't get in this shape overnight, and it ain't going to get fixed overnight outside of divine intervention. But we can sit down and we can talk about it. We can talk about all these terrible things. Never ending war and crime. We can talk about the folks that are in charge. I would like to actually sit down and have a conversation with whoever is the most powerful family in the world. If that be the Waltons, then I would like to sit down and have a conversation with them. Because I'd like to see what they got to say. It might be something out of the science fiction. They might eat my face off. I don't know. But I'd still take that chance just for the off chance that maybe I could spark some sort of idea or interest in their mind that would plant a seed that would move this world in a direction other than the one that we're going in. That book that talked about how in the last days, in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. If you actually look at how it was described about how before the great flood in the biblical reference, and then after, what was going on back then? That seems to be where we're heading right now. And so if we actually are living in that kind of deal, we're going to see those days come at this pace. I kind of like to steer this boat down a different destiny path, and I really believe that we have the capability of doing so. I think the odds are really slim because we can't even talk to each other about whether Satan's a good guy or a bad guy. Or what? We can't talk to each other about whether the Republicans or the Democrats are right. We'll stand out there with our wooden stick and our paper sign saying save the trees, looking ridiculous before the world, not realizing that while we're doing that, we're making somebody money. That's it. Somebody said the root to all evil was in the money. And I'm starting to believe it. So that said, you know, we're getting down there, folks. Which one do you want to go first to say some last words of wisdom before we get up out of here? It's been an amazing conversation.
Always ladies first.
Well, thank you. You know, I always say that in order to survive to our fullest and to protect ourselves and to become who we were really meant to be, we need a spiritual foundation. You know, you can't get very far without a faith in something really stronger than yourself, a belief in something, and that's what I have, and you guys have it as well. Just different words, but same thing. And I'm always saying, you know, get your spiritual foundation strong, grow your spiritual garden. You know, this is what you're going to need energetically and powerfully, and in your faith and the strength in that. Going to save your life. It's going to give you the inner peace that you need. It's going to give you the strength for this battle that we're dealing with, this spiritual battle. Because all that we're talking about is everything to do with the battle of our spirit or soul. This is what we're talking about. And what is sacred? You know, the battle against something so sacred and beautiful, this creation. And that includes everyone. To me, every person, I don't care who they are, what they're doing now as an adult, started out as a sacred being. You know, they came from source. We all came from that same source. We're all heading back to the same source. We will call it. We're all on the journey to the sacred mountain, and there are many different pathways to that. And that's the way Creator set it up. We're many different colors of people. That's the way Creator set it up. I think Creator loved color. Creator loved the adventure. Creator love the beauty and the awesomeness of things. And we see everything is in relationship. Everything is related. Nothing is outside. So if you think you're insignificant, that's a lie. That's an indoctrination telling you you're insignificant. You know, if you think that this is too big for me and there's nothing I can do, I'm only one person, that's also a lie. You know, like we said, you're important. Every one of us is so significant. And we talk about this in the relationship to your frequency, to the energy that you emanate. Your words, your thoughts, your beliefs not only affect the whole, either positively or negative, but affect your health and your well-being, your immune system. Your body's listening. And you were told that you're insignificant. You were told that you have to rely on an authority in all systems, whether it's education, whether it's religion, whether it's the medical area, whatever it is. The authorities have made it sure that everyone would rely on them, and they're just feeding us lies and manipulating us. So it's like to get back to the source is within you. The source is within you, and the source is something far greater than what we believe these authorities are. So that's what I say. You build your spiritual guard and strengthen yourself, your connectedness to something so strong that you have faith in that, against this darkness, against this evil. Because this is a plan. This is an agenda. You know, I don't care what you call it. You can call it Satan, you can call it the devil, you can call it Harry or Joe. It does not matter to me. We are in a spiritual battle, and this is our time, basically, right now, this timeline, where we really need to come into unity, but strengthen our connectedness to our faith.
Very well said, Barbara. Awesome. I want to say two things. I would give anything in this world to see this world on the very first day of creation. I would love to see what this world looked like. You go out there and you look up like semi-precious stones, and you find that these rocks that are all cruddy looking, and you can put them in a tumbler and they'll shine up and they'll be all these beautiful colors. Imagine before all those years of crud got onto those rocks, all the mud and everything else got onto those rocks. Imagine walking down the side of a stream with all these different colored rocks laying down alongside that. It must have looked like heaven. It must have been so beautiful. And the second thing before I go to Barry is that I learned something from you a while back. It's been quite a while back. I think it was actually on one of your shows that you used to do on a different network about putting your bare feet in the grass. I actually do that. I actually get out there, take my shoes and socks off, and I recommend it to people. Just stand there in the bare grass and just be quiet. Just feel it. And it's amazing. So, you know, take that how you want, but nature's got something going on. Anyway, how about you, Barry?
Well, that was very well said, Barbara, and I couldn't agree with you more that I believe we're in the biggest spiritual battle the human race has ever witnessed. And I believe that there's a time coming when things are going to change. If I didn't have a spiritual foundation right now, I look at what I see going on in the world. I look everywhere I look, I see chaos developing. I believe there's a trying time coming up for the human race, but I also believe there's a great time coming. And if I didn't have a spiritual connectedness to my life, man, right now, I think I would honestly go insane. Because the world is going insane. And that's not sugarcoating anything. That's what I see. I see a world going mad. So something at one point is going to give. We all have different ideas exactly what's going to happen and what trigger points are and where we're going in the future. But I think we'd all agree that, you know, things are going to change in the future. And we have to be ready for that. And to me, it's just my spiritual connection right now prepares me for that, because I know there is going to be something gold, and I'm ready for it. But it is an exciting time.
I'm going to agree with you there. What just came to my mind is it's our faith that gives us this ability to say this is an awesome time.
Yeah.
And something good is coming too.
I believe that, Barbara. I think we're going to go through some bad times first. I honestly do.
I can't disagree with either of you on any point that you made. Folks, sorry about that. You've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. And once again, my last plea to each and every one of you is, first off, take really good care of yourself. Make yourself good and strong and stay true to your faith and help each other out. That's the best advice that I can give you. But if you like this show, any part of this show, cut it, chop it, whatever, just share something that you were inspired by on this show. Tell people to come here and listen in. Tell them to come and say hi. You won't find donation buttons posted all over this site. You won't find us asking you for anything. We're trying to give you something. We're trying to give you every bit of information that we've looked up, and we're willing to accept any information that you want to share. That we're on this journey trying to figure things out. The Knights of the Round Table is about bringing the most brilliant minds together to try to solve these problems that we got, even if it's just solving them amongst our little circle so far. You know, the circle's getting wider, but even if it's just in our little community that we got right here, it makes us better. It makes us wiser. It opens our eyes to possibilities. So I'm not trying to sell you nothing. I'm not trying to convert you to anything. I'm just trying to be what I should have been a long time ago. I should have been a good, servant to my fellow brothers and sisters. I'm humbled and I'm honored just to be able to have this conversation with all these wonderful people and you listening in. That's what the Knights of the Round Table stands for. It's a round table because ain't nobody the leader. Oh, King Shaziz the Terrible is just one of the crew right here. That's it. It's that simple. You know, I put that on there because it's kind of amusing. With that said, if you like this show, please share the podcast. Rebroadcast it if you have that capability. It would be truthfully appreciated. That's how we make this thing work. We keep throwing these positive pebbles and planting the good seeds of love and joy and hope and all that to the world. That's what we do. But since we're in a crazy world, I'm going to play us up out of here with a crazy song. It's our old Speedwagon riding the storm out, because that's kind of what I feel like we've been doing. We're riding the storm out. But I think when we get to the other side, I think as long as we hang on tight to each other, we'll be okay. I think there's some good things on the way. I honestly believe that all these words that we've spoken have done some really good, you know, positive things. These words are powerful. Every word coming out of your mouth is powerful, more powerful than you can possibly imagine. My God did not create any trash, only treasure, and that is you. So if you want to find the miracle that you've been waiting for, go look in the mirror. Go look in your child's eyes. Look in each other's eyes. We are the dream team. So peace and love, everybody. Take care.
is the dream. The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us from every nation come together and make that future a great one.
It was that ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100-1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Old woman!
Man!
Ma'am, sorry. What night lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37, I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you. We're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords, is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help! I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
When knights of the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We do routines to call the scenes, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. When knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. The many times we give and rise that are quite something able. We're off so mad in Camelot, we sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram along.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Who ye? Who ye? King Shaziz the Terrible. King Shaziz the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.